And welcome to another edition of Film Grok. Today we'll be doing the Western 90s classic, Tombstone. My name is Serge Delpierre. To my right,
Johnny Tribby.
To my left,
Tim McMillan.
To his left,
oh, Curtis Nelson.
Curtis, this is thanks to you.
Oh, well, you know.
I know. So what are your experiences with Tombstone?
Well, I mean, Tombstone came out, what was it, 93? 94?
1993,
93?
Yeah.
93. And I had just arrived in L.A., bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, and being from Oklahoma and riding horses my whole life and working around farms and stuff like that, I'm like, hey, Western, I got to go see it. And I went out and saw both this one and the other Wyatt Earp. But love this one just for the sheer adrenaline part of it. I mean, a lot of people don't know that the original, some of the critics called this not Tombstone, but Testrone.
Oh, nice.
So, that fit in right with me. So, had a great time, and I still go back and watch it on many occasion. Just saw the Blu-ray transfer probably about 2 weeks ago, and it looked amazing.
So, nice.
I like it.
Yeah, I remember when it came out, of course, it was competing that year with, you know, the competing films. One film has to come, you know, one film comes out, the other one has to come out too.
Yeah.
And the other one was Wyatt Earp, which was directed by Lawrence Kasdan, who at the time was I was a fan of. And I think Wyatt Earp is different. I always felt like you could mash the two of them together and get a really super great film.
Yeah, great.
Honestly, my favorite part of Wyatt Earp is the end, you know, with the shootout. The rest of it I go with, like, all of Tombstone, strangely enough. So I'm like, very interesting. And, of course, we'll talk more about the making of Tombstone. But, I mean, I've come back to it a few times, and it still stays with me. It's still as effective. And, of course, it's got that great performance by Val Kilmer. So, John?
I'm not a super big cowboy fan, but I love Clint Eastwood's old stuff. Recently saw Fistful of Dollars. And the dollar one, which was really great. Tombstone I saw a while ago, and I just really liked it because of the great acting. I mean, I loved all the guys. They were, you know, Bill Paxton, you know, the whole aliens thing, you know.
yeah, we get you.
Let's let the little girl lead us out of this mess because she stayed alive. So, and the other guy, who's the guy that
Sam
was
Elliot.
In,
Sam Elliott,
from Roadhouse.
He's the man.
Right?
Yeah. Come on, that's more than Sam Elliott's in Roadhouse,
there
but okay.
That wasn't his resume.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I was in this small little made-for-TV movie called Roadhouse.
No. There you go. So, I'm all for this, and I love to see that the structure of films, it works for any good story. And that it can be a Western or a comedy or, you know, an action adventure or Planet of the Apes or anything. And it's how you just tell a good story.
Yeah.
So I'm glad to be part of that. And just to bring the big thing that I like to think that I'm doing is I'm not doing anything new with the whole writing and the whole coaching and the whole clarity thing. But what I'm doing is bringing something into our consciousness that we've actually all been witness to for so long, but we just don't see it. And so then just saying it out loud, then all of a sudden everybody goes, oh, my God, I totally see that. And then I see how it works. And then the writers I work with then can then do it consciously as opposed to flipping around going, something's missing. I'm not sure what's going on. Second act is so long to write. What do I do for 60 pages? Blah, blah, blah. So I'm happy to partake in the Tombstone experience with you all.
Wow, you get those questions. What do I do for 60 pages?
Oh, yeah. That's part of the reason why I went through it for myself was – people can talk about the first act and second act, and then people talk about this dark area, second act, you know, what happens, and, oh, you have the midpoint, and something happens there. And it's just like, you know, for me, I'm like, shut up, people. There's certain things that just happen. Sort of like when you're building a house, you have walls, you have this, you have a foundation. It's not like you're just accidental and you don't know what to do. It's like there's certain things that are done, and then if you apply creativity to it. And what I'm thinking is, I haven't discussed this with major writers in Hollywood. They either know story so well that they just do it totally subconsciously. You know what I mean? And it's just secondhand nature because, as already you guys have seen, that just the films we've done, there's certain things that happen at certain points. So either they know it so well and it happens second nature, or they actually know what's going on and like nobody's like really saying it, or at least as far as I know, I'm like the one that's saying it the clearest way. And I don't think it's anything like a brainchild. It's just like it's becomes obvious once I know it, and so then I want to tell other people so then they can use that.
Mm-hmm. Well, in a way, it's like good editing or good music. Mm. It's best usually when you barely, well, editing especially, yeah, when you don't notice it.
Sure.
Music, I think, is kind of half and half. You don't want to notice. You want it to support everything.
Sure.
But it's good when you can actually hear it, too, yeah. Yeah. And it's playing integrally with it.
And I say, and I'll just last thing, I say in my ebook and all the other stuff to writers, right, most people don't want to know this, which is totally fine. I mean, they want to, like, my mom doesn't want to know about the structure and what happens then, you know. She wants to enjoy the movie, which I totally get. And when I walk into a building, I don't really want to know whatever, columns and Roman names. And, you know, I just want to go into a building and enjoy it. But architects are probably looking at a building differently, you know, as well as we look at movies differently, because that's what we just dig and we like to see it. And the way, Curtis, you look at acting, you know, because that's what you just do.
Yeah.
So right, and that's, I mean, that's what's craft about. Actually, we'll get to you in a second, Tim. I just want to get to the, I want to get to the cue point. We need to get to the cue point, which is going to be right after the Hollywood Pictures logo fades out completely to blank. Pause it there, and then we're ready to go. I'll say 3, 2, 1, play, and we'll all do that at the same time, and then we'll all be together. Okay, Tim.
Hello.
Hi, Tim.
Hello. Nice for you to join us there, Tim.
Well, thank you.
I'm glad you're
here. Two things. First off, John, what you were talking about, there's two different levels I always watch a film on. One is the film, for the film's sake, and the second is craftsmanship. I just naturally do that. Mm-hmm. And as I get older, for some reason, maybe it's I go through phases or cycles. Right now in my life,
it's the estrogen coming in.
And here it is now. Excuse me while I need a moment to myself. But right now, I tend to enjoy films, but I enjoy filmmaking now when I watch films. And so I'm more technically watching films for the moment. I don't know why, but I always watch with two different sets of eyes, I guess, when I see a film. So I understand what you're saying.
And there's a theory that if we do anything for 5,000 hours, I mean, because
anything
more than 5,000 hours, we become, quote unquote, like a master of it. Mm-hmm. So when people, and there's something just happens that, like, after you act for 5,000 hours, all of a sudden you just get it. Mm-hmm. You know it, you see it, da-da. And you have probably watched films consciously and aware and focused that all of a sudden, you know what I mean? You're putting it all together in a certain way. And you know, as with all of us. And so that's why when kids start young doing something, then they can
become very proficient at it.
At 21 or 22, exactly.
Start when you're young. Whatever you want to be doing, it's nice to start when you're young.
Right.
And then the second thing is I've never seen Tombstone.
Cool.
So I'm the one out of the group. I am
shocked. And
I'm
not
like a virgin screening Tombstone for the very first time.
Well, then
there's my estrogen again.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, I tried to warn you. Don't get any on me.
So I will be watching with fresh eyes.
Very nice.
Good. Well, I mean, before we start, let's do that. I mean, let me ask you a question. What have you heard about it, and what are you expecting?
I've heard performances, ensemble. Mm-hmm. With this, I've heard about troubled production, which I'd like to learn more about as we watch it. Those two things. I know it was shot in a lot of the old haunts I was at in Arizona when I lived there. Maybe I'll recognize some of them as I watch. So, Old Tucson and areas like that. So pretty much those three things are what I think of.
Very cool.
Right. Everyone has just raved about Val Kilmer, so I'm really excited to see about his performance.
Rocks.
But I know it's an ensemble, so I'm...
Yes, well, yeah, it is. And of course, we've left out the most important element of this all, and that's Kurt Russell. And
right.
Kurt Russell truly kicks ass, but we'll talk about that more as the film goes on.
I think
we should be ready now to go, so... All right, on my mark, I'm going to count 3, 2, 1. So, 3, 2, 1, play. And now we have the synergy.
And that was great. These ending credits really blow me away every time I look at them. So, what do you guys think?
It was very good. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, it was awesome.
Okay. You know, one of the
Lost production companies is no longer. Oh no,
there, synergy. There.
Excuse me, I thought it was going to be Carolco. Never mind. Yeah. My bad.
Actually, I thought the same thing.
Yeah.
I don't think Synergy's around anymore. So.
And who is this, Tim? We don't need to ask anybody.
As far as the music?
The voice.
Bruce Broughton.
No.
Jerry
Goldsmith. No.
Bruce Broughton did the score.
Listen to it.
Listen.
this Source Cube?
He was originally going to be in the film.
Oh, really?
He had to bail, and they kept him in doing that. Yeah.
You can't recognize this?
It's Robert Mitchum.
There you go.
I thought you meant the music.
No, sorry, sorry. No.
It's, okay.
No,
it's
I was saying voice.
The guy who's Mitchum. Doing the...
I heard that Robert Mitchum did one day, he fell off a horse, injured his back.
Oh.
And they wrote his character out of the screenplay, but they had him do the voiceover. Okay.
Do you know what character he was going to play?
Old man something, but they wrote his character
out of the...
I wonder
if that's the... Excuse me,
don't,
spoiler.
Don't spoil it for
it's
him.
It's the farmer.
The farmer, that's right, yeah.
The one that...
Henry Hooker.
Yeah, the one that comes in and kind of gives him
that's right, shows
exile.
Up for one shot.
Yeah. Maybe it was. So maybe...
But speaking of music, Bruce Broughton did the score for this. It originally was supposed to be Jerry Goldsmith.
Ah!
And he couldn't do it due to scheduling conflicts, and he recommended Bruce Broughton.
And I will say this, on watching it just a couple weeks ago on Blu-ray, it is a fantastic score, and Broughton does mostly television. I mean, he does a lot of movies, but he's not known like a Goldsmith or a Williams or something like that, or a Hans Zimmer, where you're always thinking of, oh, that's right. him. But it's actually perfectly fit for the movie as far as a Western goes. It right. fits into all the stylings of a classic Western score.
Would they have bananas out in the West, though? I'm serious.
Yes, because they come from South America and they get shipped in here. I want to just actually say something about the beginning newsreel footage. Is actually they did a really good job of combining actual newsreel footage with stuff they shot clearly for mm-hmm. this film. They combined it very, very well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it wasn't jarring at all. It matched.
Right.
And see, is this the brand new version that they did the redo for the Blu-ray? So it looks this clear on just just regular DVD.
Don't know. This is
a previous remastering.
Okay.
That we're watching here. The Blu-ray was remastered specifically for that.
This is a special edition, so there may be some additional footage, at least which I haven't seen, or I may have seen it in the past.
Uh-oh.
So there's Powers Booth. There's the bad guys. Wait, is that what's his face?
Portrait of a Serial Killer.
Yeah,
Henry. Portrait of a Serial Killer.
Yeah, was it John Hooker?
I forget his name. Yeah, he lives in my town. See him at the gym a couple of times. But the one thing that I love about this movie is it's so well cast with good Southern quality actors.
Yeah,
and you cannot beat Powers Booth.
Powers Booth is a bad guy.
Y'all killed two cowboys. Come on, man.
This looks like a...
Oh, there's Stephen Lang.
Stephen Lang from the new big hit, the biggest hit of all time.
Avatar. But this is many years before Avatar.
Yes. Which is so funny because when we're watching this on Blu-ray, there's about 20 of us in a room watching this, and all of a sudden we're like, hey, there's a Jim Cameron guy. Oh, there's a Jim Cameron guy. Oh, there's a Jim Cameron guy. It's like all these people that are connected to Jim Cameron. 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon here.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, there was Michael Biehn.
Yep.
Was that gang really called the Cowboys?
They weren't a gang. They were cowboys, and they would come into town, and off the range and everything else like that. But what's interesting about this movie is, or any Wyatt Earp movie, they always kind of portray the cowboys as the bad guys,
mm-hmm.
and there are a lot of people I've talked to and that have been to the actual Tombstone tour in mm-hmm. Tombstone, and they say a lot of the historians believe that they probably were the good guys, and that history kind of was wrote for Wyatt Earp because he was the lawman and he was in the politics and he had a lot of influence, and it just got wrote that he was the hero, whereas actually they were in the right in a lot of ways. And if you go back and you read a lot of the clippings mm-hmm. from the OK Corral and everything else, you can see where it would lean that way, and you get all these negative writings and stuff. So, the winner writes history, I guess.
Yes.
So this film, how does it stack up to history? Is it...
Well, the OK Corral is so well documented that this actual OK Corral fight scene and the Wyatt Earp version with Lawrence Kasdan and Kevin Costner, they're both pretty accurate.
Right.
Really accurate. It's one of the most... written about gunfights. So there were so many actual witnesses to the gunfight that it's pretty well documented that they knew exactly what happened.
Right.
In what sequence.
But the difference is that in most movies, the OK Corral is basically, it becomes the climax of the film. Whereas in these films, they're only part of them.
The only film I've seen on this subject is Gunfight at the OK Corral, John Sturges' 60s movie with Burt Lancaster and Kirk Douglas. Wow. And that the big shootout is the finale of the film, which lasts for like, I think, 15 minutes or something.
What do you think? And the actual fight
only lasted like, what, 3 minutes or something?
Oh, yeah, it's over very quickly.
It was really fast. What do you think they're going to do with that bride?
Yeah.
So now he plays Johnny Ringo.
Mm-hmm.
That looks like Camelback Mountain in the back.
Oh, yeah.
That was Michael Rooker, by the way.
Michael Rooker, yes.
Yeah.
Good actor.
And you also, in that gang, you've got John.
Oh, that is so cool.
That's Michael Rooker. You've got John Corbett.
From, what is it?
From Northern Exposure.
Northern Exposure, yes.
Ooh.
And then what's his name from Wings?
Thomas Hayden Church.
Lately, gotten his acting due these last few years. I love Michael Biehn in this, and look at his eyes right here when they do this close-up. It's a great classic Western close-up. Right here.
His eyes pop.
Isn't
with
he the one
light.
In Terminator?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Terminator, Aliens.
We gotta run, baby!
Yeah. But he's good in this.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what? And seeing this so many times, Val Kilmer gets his just due, but watch all the other actors in this movie. Yeah. They are all really, really good.
And from the writing point of view, that's the hypothesis statement of saying the six horses are going to come and get us. And now the whole rest of the movie is that true or not?
And obviously the next thing you see is, of course, Kurt Russell and Wyatt Earp. Now let's talk about Kurt Russell. Basically, George Cosmatos is credited as directing this, but actually the way this film started is Kevin Jarre, who wrote the screenplay, was the director, and he got taken off the film, I don't know by who, I guess producers. And basically the story is, and this was in, Kurt Russell gave an extensive interview like back 5 years ago about this, and that basically he just kept everything going. So he became de facto director. And they brought in George Cosmatos to essentially help to manage everything, but for the most part, Kurt Russell was directing this but did not take credit for it.
Yeah.
I had heard that.
Why didn't he take credit for it?
Because
he was first of all, a lot of people underscore or don't really talk about how I've only heard good things about Kurt Russell as far as just a human being and being a great guy. Right. And to him, he's all about filmmaking. And he comes from the old school way of filmmaking, came up through Disney as a kid. And I mean, he's just one of these guys, he's a blue collar actor. He's never had acting classes, he's never done any of that. He just in the business.
Yeah.
So.
And he's got that ape that watches movies and then tells you if it's really good or not.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, he eats his Wheaties and pushes over poles.
That ape is actually in the daily room with him now.
Yeah, exactly.
What I had heard is Kevin Jarre, I don't know how it's really pronounced,
but when he
was off the film, Kurt Russell was very concerned that the suits were going to shut down the film.
Right.
And it was due to that he brought the cast and crew together and just laid it out as it was and said, hey, gang, here's what we're looking at. I think we should work through it and keep the film going.
Right.
And so that's where he just stepped into director's duties.
And likely he stepped in and the producer said, okay, fine. And then they brought in Cosmatos. I mean, they made it work however it worked, and it's all fine. And I believe Cosmatos died soon after that. That's Paula Malcolmson there on the left, who actually was in Deadwood much later and now is on Caprica.
I heard that George Cosmatos was in name only because overall he's just there to keep things going, but Kurt Russell really predominantly did the directing. Kevin Jarre directed all of Charlton Heston's scenes and then was let go.
Oh, okay. Mm. So you know about Charlton Heston being in the film.
Yes.
Okay. All right. All right. So now
we
can
say
that was the surprise.
That was the Robert Mitchum
part,
I would think, that he was going to do. And then
maybe it morphed into Charlton Heston after Mitchum couldn't do it. Nice
fantastic
shot.
Fantastic shot. The one thing I can't get past in watching this film is that Kurt Russell just doesn't do Westerns. I mean, I think this might be his first or...
Good point.
Besides him. And it's unbelievable because he makes an amazing cowboy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, he holds his own with Sam Elliott and, you know. I mean, in this, you'll see scenes. Bill Paxton, God love him, and I love him. But in this movie, a couple of times, you're like, all right, step aside there, Bill. Look at Sam and Kurt here. I mean, they just own the camera when they're standing in front of it. They got such great faces.
I wonder how much this has in common with the Magnificent Seven as far as ensemble dynamics. and what this was like to shoot. Mm-hmm. Because you hear all the legend and lore of Magnificent Seven of Yul Brynner compared to Steve McQueen and who is trying to do what in their scenes and and not in pull focus so they can be prominent. I wonder how much of that went on with this film.
I don't think there's as much of that here. I never got the feeling for that.
Well, let's let Tim hear Val Kilmer's opening scene a little bit.
Okay.
This just sets a precedent for the way he's going to be the rest of the movie. Look at those eyes. And that's Stallone's brother, Frank Stallone.
Oh, that is, yeah. That's Joanna Pacula.
Good shot.
Okay, we're going eccentric here.
Yes, very.
Yeah.
But the writing's there, too.
That was a nice shot.
And what was it? What was the physical malady that he's dying of?
I think it was TB.
Great pauses.
Nice.
As eccentric as he is, watch how still he is, too. That's the thing. Now, one thing I don't, that I never understand is, like, I've seen Frank Stallone in a few movies, and he's not been in a ton of them. Mm-hmm. But in this role, great job. Mm-hmm. Did you ever see Barfly?
Yeah, he was. He was a bartender in Barfly,
and he always kept fighting Mickey Rourke. I mean, he's a good actor. And why doesn't this guy get more opportunities to act?
And
I mean,
a musician. I've heard some of his stuff.
Yeah, he's a fantastic musician. Yeah.
And first time I ever heard of him was in. What was the sequel? What was the Stallone thing from Saturday Night Fever, Staying Alive?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stallone, and Frank Stallone did the music or something?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Frank Stallone was doing they were singing a cappella around the trash can in Rocky. So when they were going there, and he wrote that song.
That's cool.
In the movie Rocky. So,
So you're wondering where he's been.
Well, I mean,
lately.
Stallone, excuse me. Sly used to carry, I mean, their gear and stuff around before he became an actor.
Oh.
And he used to employ his own brother. But anyway, off to Tombstone. But Val Kilmer's so good in this because he allows the amazing shot.
Yeah.
He allows the writing. And I would like to know, because if it was a problem set, how much of it was actually written on the page and how much of it was volunteered writing?
I think it's likely that all the dialogue was written already. I think the thing is that was probably very densely written, and the studio was just like, no, we want more action, that kind of thing.
Well, I didn't know how troubled the production was to where if it went into the script as well as to, oh boy, we got to rewrite this on the spot. We got to try to make this match.
My impression is Kevin Jarre, who wrote the script, he was directing his own scripts. I imagine he really made sure that everything got there. Whether there was stuff rewritten on the set?
Well, then
I mean, there's maybe, but it doesn't sound like it the way it's written.
I'll tell you the Billy Bob Thornton story here in just a second when he comes up then.
Mm. Oh, Billy Bob's in this?
Yes. He's got a small part in this. This is before Sling Blade.
What is this?
Lester Moore.
Oh, did you see that?
Four something.
Four slugs.
Yeah.
No less, no more.
And supposedly that's taken from a real
That's a real tombstone.
Tombstone.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
No, that's what I was saying. That's,
I've heard
it's
it
a real. I can't remember what the name of the cemetery is in Tombstone, but that's what's from.
What interests me about these shots, and when you watch how classically filmed this was, and even that bar scene and some of the really good shots in that small little bar scene, I'd like to know how much of it was Val Kilmer, Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
Well, I think,
and
I think
how
was,
much of it he did.
I think it was likely all of it.
How much
him,
of his ideas
and,
he,
and
the cinematographer.
Him with the DP is just,
but I mean,
let's get this done. What's the best way to do it? Because it's not, I mean, they're using a lot of telephoto and.
Sam Elliott. I could hear that guy read the phone book. He's got an amazing, amazing voice.
He has a wonderful presence.
I'm waiting for Swearingen to show up.
Look at this.
Swearingen.
Swearingen.
That's from,
it's Deadwood.
Deadwood was awesome.
Yeah, is great. But Deadwood, of course, I think owes, actually in a way, probably owes a lot to this, somewhat. This helped revive, I guess, because Westerns have definitely been out for a while. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Kasdan did a Western back in the early 80s. Silverado.
That's right. But Clint Eastwood did them all the way up through the 90s. And Unforgiven was successful just before this, and so was Dances with Wolves. But
that's right. Never mind.
Right around that. It's like a baseball movie. Hollywood just doesn't want to make them. There's an audience for it, but not a large enough audience. So therefore, they think mm-hmm. they won't make money,
right? You know? Or to make them.
Well, this also had to cost a lot of money. I mean, look at all the suits, all the clothes, all the.
Well, that's the whole thing with period pieces. You're dipping so much into the budget for those kind of things.
But. Oh yeah, it's all our costumes and props.
But right now they're making True Grit, Coen Brothers. We'll see.
Well, they won the Academy Award, so they could do what they want.
Yeah, they can do what they want. So, but
I had heard that Kevin Jarre's original screenplay was an epic. And each character went into extreme depth with each character, their history and their stories. And it was a 3.5-4 hour movie.
I'd like to see it, because my one beef with this movie is it just ends. It's like, it's all of a sudden, it's like, okay, and we're done. And I'm like, wait. Well, so we'll talk about that when we get there. And to me, it totally bumps me, and it kind of really bothers me the finale is.
I think that was my whole feeling when I saw it. It was... yeah, it was just like boom, and I was like, it tainted my whole feeling on the whole movie.
Well, but in a way, it's still. It ends the same way Wyatt Earp does. It's basically it ends. If I'm not confusing my movies, but how it ends? Mm-hmm. Well, it's that climactic scene.
Yeah,
you know, when they're shooting out of the bushes. I mean, that's the one scene in Wyatt Earp where I think they staged everything nicely. But that's the one scene that really popped for me. That whole thing that made that whole scene pop for me was here. It all happens all down in bushes, and they're all pinned down, and then it's which clearly was important in some kind of way.
The Oriental, they didn't have a lot of public relations offices back in those days. Yeah. So it's called the Oriental.
What's the Oriental?
The bar he's going into. Here real quick, let me tell this Billy Bob Thornton story. One time I was able to have lunch with Billy Bob Thornton, he's just an amazing, amazing, friendly, friendly guy. But I had heard from his assistant, I do believe, and I hope I'm not misremembering, like Robert J. Clemens said. This scene was just a small scene that Billy Bob was in, and it was just kind of there and kind of showing how this guy was kind of a jerk, and Kurt Russell goes and settles his hash, and Billy Bob thought he could add a lot to it and requested, and I don't know if he requested with Kurt Russell, the original director, and he said, would you mind if I went back in my trailer and kind of spiffed this up a little bit and wrote some of it? And he said, sure. And so he fully extended the scene, and they gave him the license to write this. So all this stuff that is going on between Billy Bob Thornton right here on the left is
that's Billy?
His writing.
Wait.
This is before he got his all his phobias.
Hang on. Billy,
he was big.
That's Billy Bob at least 40 pounds ago.
Listen to this.
Holy cow.
Having family from Arkansas, I can never stop listening to Billy Bob Thornton. He's
holy
great.
Holy cow. Wow, he lost a lot of weight.
Yeah. Look at his eyes, man.
It's the lighting.
I love the warmth of this lighting. Watch this. Nice, all the browns.
Watch Billy Bob. Jigger. Something on your mind? Watch what he says. It's totally Arkansas slang. Now watch this tight shot on Kurt right here. He'll walk into camera.
nice.
There's a nice line there for you, John.
That's how I thought. Something. I wonder if that's Billy Bob Thornton's line.
And I have no idea, and I didn't press the issue too much. He just told me, you know, yeah. I mean, his assistant told me that, and I didn't want to ask too much about what he did and didn't write, and so I have no idea, and I don't know how much of it's true, and I don't know how much of it is
I mean, Billy Bob has a reputation as being a writer, not all actors are, so I think maybe that preceded that provided the opportunity, and they had the relationships where he could do that.
Well, I had heard also that Billy Bob, a lot of people don't realize it, on a lot of small, low-budget films, that's kind of how he got his writing legs. He didn't come out here to be an actor. He came out here to be a writer. And he would go to these failed, low-budget screenplays or films or whatever, and this is at least why I hope I'm not misspeaking.
Uh-oh, here he comes.
And he basically would go, hey, I'll take this over for you, and I'll rewrite it. And he was a ghostwriter on a lot of these low-budget B-movies.
And then he was whittling away at Sling Blade.
Exactly.
During the whole time. And then, boom.
Nice introduction to Doc.
For any actor who wishes to do a Southern accent, you just need listen to Billy Bob Thornton for your homework.
What's a Western without Sam Elliott?
One without Clint Eastwood.
That's true.
You know, Kurt Russell's part of the rare breed of inspirational actors, of a career arc of where it can go. Mm-hmm. And him and Ron Howard and who else? Mm-hmm. I mean, that have been child actors and have held their life together, have not gone into the darkness, never to be heard again. For whatever reason, and then come out maturing and growing and becoming a full artist. Mm-hmm. It's great to watch.
Yeah.
You know, this scene's really interesting. These two scenes, going into, I guess, tropes and behaviors, and it really lays out the whole...
Thank you, that's great.
Perfect. You know, like the code of how to be a man. Mm-hmm. And in a way, what Tombstone did is it rewrote it a little bit, and I think that's why there's a bit of an appeal to it, because basically Kurt Russell came in there and said, basically, be a man. I mean, you want to be a coward, you want to bully people around. Well, then you better be able to stand up. Oh, you can't. And then they just reemphasize that here. Says we're all men. We could shoot you dead right now, but we're going to be honorable and not do anything. Go. Mm-hmm. Which is goes back to burnishing the whole legend of what Wyatt Earp was supposed to be like, and basically, because he turned Tombstone to a no-gun zone.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Wyatt Earp was already famous for doing that. He would, I believe, in Dodge City. I think it was Dodge City. He would come into these towns and say no guns in town and everything else. And one statistic I always remember about him is I think he either only killed one, maybe two people in his whole career as a lawman, maybe just one, and. At what he would do is he was very famous, and they show it in this movie, of just butting people on the head with his gun. He would just like slam him with the butt of his gun right in the head and knock him out, and that's all he would do. And he would always come at these guys like he just did with the Billy Bob Thornton character and just confront them mano a mano and say, listen, you know,
right,
here's the law and do it. And he never had to really pull his guns because of that.
Right.
Well, so far I can see why this would have been dubbed testosterone.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's all about, you know.
Actually, I think Wyatt Earp and his brother show up as characters in Deadwood for a character arc, I think, in season two.
Yeah.
I think so. I don't remember.
I believe it's Sam Elliott's character that he's playing actually had a longer law career than Wyatt Earp did.
So, yeah, it was just, it was all said and done. Once again, I think it goes back to the whole thing is that I think, yeah, Wyatt Earp, oh my God, Billy Zane, holy crap.
He's most perfectly cast actor in this movie.
Another Jim Cameron connection.
There you go. Yeah, that's what he's doing. As we're watching this movie, we're like, oh.
And one of my favorite actresses, here we go.
She's gorgeous.
Thank you.
Dan now, well, one of my, watch the eyes. Oh, there you go. Look, Kurt. Oh, I'm sorry, guys. But
yeah.
Never mind. I'm not alone.
And this was just after, China Beach. So, which you all, of course, are fans of, correct? China Beach? John, China Beach?
Oh, no, I never saw China Beach.
Oh, man, great TV series.
No, yeah, I've heard wonderful things about it, but...
Yeah.
Boy, they've got some light
pumped
on
her. I like her line right here.
Oh, yeah.
I want one. Isn't that the line? You guys need to see Iron Man 2. That's a Robert Downey Jr. line.
He says, really?
I want one.
Nice. Oh, well, there you go.
When you see Scarlett, is it Johansson? Johansson? How do you say her name?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Scarlett. Haven't seen that. No.
Scarlett Johansson?
Johansson.
Scarlett Johansson, yeah. The one thing I always get about these.
I don't know. I see a J. I say, is it? Do you say it? Do you not?
I would like to know how accurate it is in a lot of these Westerns where guys just shoot into the ceiling and it's like, you know, it's like.
And just kick each other around. That actually looked like my high school biology class right there. Yeah.
Well, I mean, getting back to the whole thing about the Western, and we were talking about Dances with Wolves and Unforgiven, I think there was essentially a move. It is nice.
It's all long, it's a one long shot.
Nice boom.
But basically, the genre was changing in its way. Mm-hmm. Eastwood changed it. I mean, I think this treats it differently also than it had been.
Curtis, I know Westerns are a genre you're particularly connected to and fond of. What do you think makes a good Western? What are the ingredients?
Well, I mean, I guess it's just too simple. I mean, a good reason to be. I mean, it's like you look at all these Westerns, they're always on a treasure hunt and they have something that they're going after, you know, they're catching the bad guy, whatever it is, but also just well-written characters. I mean, and you can't pussyfoot around with Westerns in my book. I mean, I don't know if that answers the question or not, but I mean, I'm a very direct kind of a guy and I like people to speak directly. And a lot of these movies fall in that line of say what's on your mind and, you know,
well, I think
your intentions are and follow through. And I think that's why the success of it was people just followed through with what they said in a lot of these Westerns, you know. When Clint Eastwood said he was going to do something, he did it.
I see.
And it had a wry sense of humor about itself, you know. That's probably a horrible answer, but I love him. But, I mean, I like in this movie, I mean, I was a baseball player growing up my whole life. And, what I like about this is... the fraternity of men. I mean, and in baseball is that. It's a fraternity of men who are sitting, you know, in this enclosed space of a dugout half the game. So you're sitting there and you have to entertain each other. And you see these Cowboys, they really like each other. And Wyatt Earp and his brothers, they all like each other. And they have this sense of humor that's different than a lot of other movies that is sarcastic and very juvenile in some cases. So I'm as juvenile as they come. Sorry, mm-hmm. I'll shut up now.
Well, I think the Western, what it allows, you know, us to do is to look at, I guess, what we see currently through a perceived lens of what what things used to be like, what we think it was like, as opposed to what it's like. I mean, and the symbols and the tropes, Terry Quinn.
Lost, baby.
Baby, Lost, yes. And this is what gives us a chance to see. And that's why, of course, how the Western is treated changes, because it changes on the time it's done, and obviously in the early 90s, able to
expand once again on the whole why. I mean, they were men of action, and I think in our world that we live in, it's so hard to be a man or a woman of action as far as like being direct and doing what you are set out to do. Whereas they didn't hold their tongue, they didn't hold their gun, they just.
It's presented like that also because it's the frontier where there was essentially, as we're seeing here,
exactly.
Lawlessness. The law hadn't, society hadn't grown so big that laws had to nail everything down. I mean, now you look here, it's like, okay, they're just shooting around. I mean, really, you shouldn't be doing that, but no one's stopping.
Well, it was a very Lord of the Flies mentality. It was like, well, the strong survived and the weak just got out of their way.
Is this film chock full of symbolism? As I'm watching this for the first time,
there is a lot of symbolism. You'll see it here in a little bit too. We'll talk about it.
Faust and what was it? Henry V.
The devil,
Very interesting.
Very instructive.
Interesting choice of theater that they're watching.
Well,
actually, let's get to that. Actually, when you do use theater in a film or story, you by definition are doing something symbolic and reflecting something back as to what is.
Well, he just said, "Who's the devil?" And here she is. She's kind of the thorn in Wyatt Earp's life to kind of change his direction. So she's enticing him to be an adulterer. Mm-hmm.
You may be.
And Val Kilmer is the voice of the audience in this movie all the way.
Yeah. Actually, let's talk about Dennis Quaid for a moment, who was in Wyatt Earp.
Yes.
And what a great performance.
He did a fantastic job.
And I mean, just as good as Val Kilmer.
Yeah,
different, but just as good.
Different and just as good, exactly.
Yeah.
Probably, if you would think about what Doc Holliday must have been like and looked like and acted like, it would probably sound like Dennis Quaid way over Val Kilmer.
Oh, really?
Well, I mean, if you ever, I mean, he was way more sickly. I think he dropped to like 130 pounds for the film and just almost killed
himself. That's right. Yeah, Dennis Quaid lost a lot of weight.
130 pounds?
Yeah. I mean, well, Doc Holliday was essentially dying, you know, I mean,
right.
And so he whittled himself away, and
wow.
his Georgia accent was very spot on. So,
mm-hmm. Okay. Interesting.
Sorry, I just went over a whole plot point where Bill Paxton was asking about heaven or hell and do you believe in heaven or hell and all that stuff. And this comes back later in the film.
There's something I should know as a first-time viewer?
Yes. He basically said, do you believe in God? Do you believe in heaven? And he's like, I don't know. Do you? Yeah. And he goes, well, I hear there's a light. You know, and so that comes around later.
Okay. Do we know who shot this? Who the DP was?
DP? I don't know.
Standby.
Have the computer man look it up there.
I'm looking on the inner tubes.
She actually does a really good job playing a wastoid here.
Who is that?
Her name doesn't come to mind. Sure.
Is that Lisa Collins?
I'm sure she did a film with James Cameron, whoever she is.
And this is very accurate. I don't know about her character being accurate, but the accurate to the time where people were just drugging it up all over the place with opium and all these different Eastern drugs that were coming over from Asia.
William A. Fraker.
Real quick,
did you just see what happened? This is like the start of the second act. So you had three things. The bad guy was introduced. Well, not introduced, but we saw again in there. And then we had the chick that he loves turns out to be the devil character. And then his wife has the drug problem. It's like this is a whole new world, you know, that now he's stepping into. And this is the first time he's dealing.
The wife is played by Dana Wheeler Nicholson.
William A. Fraker, if I remember correctly. Oh, my gosh. A hugely established DP. Lots of great stuff.
What's he famous for?
I'm slipping my mind. I know 60s, 70s stuff. I know William A. Fraker. That's the way I recall his name.
We'll shut up again because this is a classic scene in this movie that's one of the more recognized scene out of the movie. Coming up, but I mean, I like this interaction between Kurt Russell and Val Kilmer. They're so much different. Wyatt Earp's a practical guy, looks at things through practical eyes, and then Val Kilmer is just living life at the edge at all the times, and he says so many things that are offensive and whatnot, and you saw him right there correct his own brother, Kurt Russell did. Just leave him alone. That's just his way. Don't even, you know, he's just trying to get under your skin and he's doing it, so therefore just leave him. And he gets him, whereas most people didn't like Doc Holliday, and that's what Wyatt Earp's character liked about him was the fact that he was this guy that you always knew what he was thinking. He told you everything, so he dug that.
William A. Fraker was a DP for such films as 1941, War Games, Irreconcilable Differences, Day of the Dolphin. Sharky's Machine.
Oh, Sharky's Machine.
Bullet.
Right, oof. Bullet. That's it. There you okay. go.
The President's Analyst. Oh, Dana.
He did a lot of great work. Would anyone here have liked to have lived in these during this time?
I don't know.
No, you know, I like indoor plumbing.
Yeah. Could you imagine in the desert of Arizona, which you've been there? How about you think?
No. How romanticized. What was that?
With all those clothes they had on? And
the wool clothes. I heard somewhere that the director, I forget which one of the directors, said you've got to wear wool clothes to the cast. To be accurate, and Val Kilmer pointed out, he said, that's what made my character go crazy. Wearing wool clothes when we put a thermometer on set, it was 130 degrees.
I think it was Kevin Jarre.
No, and the insanity of wearing clothes like that and then trying to keep clean is insane.
I doubt if they did.
Here's the here's a very good scene in the movie. So watch the I like watching Bill Paxton in this one. They do little quick cuts to him. So watch. See, did you see Wyatt Earp moved his chips to a different card because he knew what was going on? Now get out of my face. Here you go. There's your money. See that? He moved his chips. Powers Booth put his chips on one set of cards. Wyatt Earp moved them to a good set of cards and then dealt so he'd win.
Of course, Johnny Ringo is the character that, was it Richard Starkey renamed himself for? Ringo Starr?
Mm. I don't know.
Yep. Nice gun. All right.
Watch him.
Looked like a Bond film. For a minute, I thought it was in a Bond film with that gun. What was that? Spy Who Loved Me, where he blows him out from under the table?
A lot of great, subtle, but good acting here. Look at Bill with his eyes.
Throwing down in Latin. All right.
Interesting.
I love this sheriff's little line here.
That's Harry Carey, by the way.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Even though apparently the actual sheriff was much, much younger, but they put Harry Carey in there.
Harry Carey Jr., right?
Yes, Harry Carey Jr.
And that's one thing you have to give credit to Michael Biehn in this movie. He does all these things himself and does a really good job of doing it. Look, Bill Paxton. Could you imagine what direction he's getting? Okay, he's spinning his gun. Okay, Bill Paxton's like, all right, got to remember my days with B acting.
It's funny because now we can just look at that, but back then it had to be nerve-wracking because that gun could have gone off at any moment. You know what I'm saying? Because that's what guns do.
But that was the point, is that he'd do that and maybe shoot at any moment.
But I mean,
but
real.
That's all.
Yeah, in real.
Or even accidentally.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
Obviously it's all showing off. It's all about, am I going to... This is great.
I love Kurt Russell.
And he basically shows him all up. That's actually really good writing.
It is. It's very good writing. Yeah, it's very funny. Because it would have been boring with another gun.
No, because now he's basically, he's embarrassing. He's embarrassing, shaming him, and then essentially challenging him.
Well, and he's also saying, you can spin your goddamn guns all day long. Doesn't mean anything. Can you shoot me and can you kill me?
Yeah.
Right.
I don't know if it was planned or if it's just the natural facial hair of Bill Paxton, but you can maybe because he's a little brother, they gave him a smaller mustache, or that his stash just doesn't stack up to Kurt Russell and Sam Elliott.
Maybe he can't grow as good a mustache.
Yeah, exactly.
Stash envy.
We all have
because they all got the stashes in this,
except her.
That's true. Yeah, Kurt Russell's sporting a major stash there.
Oh, we had a fly on her finger. That was authentic.
Flies cannot land on Dana Delaney. I'm sorry. It is forbidden.
And what a gorgeous horse this is. Not that people really care, but and he's a good rider as well.
Is it easy to spot Curtis, as far as people who are uneasy in a saddle when you watch
Westerns? Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, what's interesting here is he doesn't have a traditional Western salad, right? Salad.
Western salad. That sounds good.
Western salad. Mm. Western saddle.
I'd like a Western salad, please. That's a nice view, by the way.
I'm trying to figure out where they shot it.
This is Arizona, though, right?
Right. It looks near Prescott. No, it can't be near Prescott. Maybe.
Is she riding side saddle?
Yes, she is.
Oh, what a lady. Well, I assume that's kind of hard to do.
And this is good riding here, you know, the whole using the horses is
Know,
just a bridge to them.
Can I say something? Shooting on horses is tough because basically, essentially you have to work with a crane because everything's up very high.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You have to have...
film horses.
Savvy horses, yeah.
Very experienced film horses.
Yeah, I'm an oak, all right. That was the reference to the line that Doc Comer said earlier.
Yes, that's very nice.
Well, crane, techno crane, but...
As an actor, I would hate that.
Okay, why do we need this slow motion shot? Yeah. Okay.
These are the Sam Peckinpah moments where he's rolling over his grave. He's like, what are you doing, slow motion in a Western?
But that's a nice shot. That's nice,
yeah.
Too.
Okay. There's a couple of these in the movie
the
where it just doesn't
we
fit,
didn't mean
and
that.
Like, really? And I would guess that that's not Kurt Russell.
Well, this is some good second unit directing.
Yeah,
look at that.
Yeah.
You know, and the riders look
and
very
now that's
like
not
the actors.
Kurt Russell. And those are stunt riders, obviously, and they were probably...
Are they some horses?
Yeah. But
still, they were riding them to a certain extent.
But right here, you know, this is all him.
Can you tell if Dana Delaney can ride?
She can't ride, no.
She can't ride?
But she's also riding side saddle, so... Yeah, I'll give her a small pass.
Now, in my mind, Sam Peckinpah used slow motion gratuitously as far as any violence that if you watch The Wild Bunch.
Use it correctly is what I'm trying to say.
There was just that one shot. I don't know why they had
jumping on the horse.
I see.
Otherwise, everything was fine.
But notice the white and the black horse, the female horse is
white. Notice that. But he's got the dark horse.
Yeah. And his horse is a stud, so it's like...
Yeah. And they're going to lay down
that's
the kind flowers.
Of blatant symbolism right there.
A lot of light pumped on them.
Yeah, there.
It's the romance scene. We need light.
Mm-hmm. Nice rim light for Dana Delaney.
Always. And Kurt Russell.
He has his, too.
Oh, he's got a strong
William Fraker has his light source all mapped out.
Those HMIs are working overtime right now.
Kurt Russell's one of these guys, and I don't understand it. To me, anyway, I mean, all these actors get mentioned as great actors, and you look at the roles that he did that brought so much life to some of them, you know, that were either underwritten or, you know. But I think that he is so blended into these characters, you just don't really think about it as good acting. But essentially, isn't that what you're supposed to be doing as an actor, is to make it kind of just breathe and not noticeable? You know, I mean, not that Daniel Day-Lewis and those other guys aren't fantastic actors, but they're known for acting. It's like, oh, did you see what he did? Whereas he is so natural in this. He's so natural in The Thing. He's so natural in even some stupid movie, not stupid, but a cult movie like Escape from New York, where he's Snake Plissken. It's just so easy and so...
Or The Thing. I love him in The Thing.
He's absolutely amazing in The Thing and doesn't get his just due for it.
But like what Serge was talking about with editing and music, whether... it calls attention to itself or if it really fulfills its purpose. And as an actor, whenever I see an actor get in the way of the person
exactly
that they should be on screen due to presentation, then I get taken out of the film. But if I am enraptured in a person, then the actor has completely done it above and beyond what they're there to do.
Exactly.
All right. I need to speak a bit of heresy here.
Go.
You know how much I love Dana Delaney.
Yes.
I don't really feel like their scenes really do a lot for me together.
I don't think their whole story really fits well into the movie as a whole.
I think that's probably what it is. It
but
bugs me.
And maybe that's because of what we spoke of before. Maybe there was a lot larger script and they just kept certain things and left certain things. And once again, this is what bugs me kind of about the ending later on. It's kind of like it just ends with them. And you're like, well, wait a minute. What the?
How did it wind up there?
There was so much.
Oh, did they end up together then?
Yes,
they do.
So this is the 45-minute scene.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then that's why.
Yeah.
Okay, because at 45 minutes, so that's how they
look at this
up.
Shot.
Yeah.
How long do you think they waited for that one?
Sunset.
Yeah.
Or sunrise. It could be sunrise. Oh, my gosh.
Well, I don't know. You're from Arizona.
If that you looks know, more sunset-ish.
Yeah.
But I've heard that about this film. The love story turns a lot of people off compared to the rest of the film. Yeah.
There's something about it that just it doesn't fit in quite how with the rest of it somehow.
I'm totally with you. I actually think it was off. I think it was well written and it was cool, but yeah, it just seemed like it shifted gears so drastically.
Yeah,
just and on I the history, I get a feeling I wasn't that
wanted, or you know what it was? It was like a love story done like in modern day time way, as opposed to a love story done back then. Do you know what I'm saying? She was like talking like a 21st century.
Well, and that's the thing is,
girl back then.
Supposedly she. I mean, if you ever read the history of her, they ended. Okay. He really did end up with her, and she is a real character, and she is a historical character.
Okay, yeah, okay.
And they did stay married through the rest of their life after this, where this film takes place. Right. And she was very charismatic like that and very much into the arts and blah, blah, blah. And she kind of took him around and they essentially became like big Hollywood players and stuff. Like
really?
He knew, I mean, they'll reference it later in the movie or at the end of the movie that he was friends with like, you know, actors and, you know, politicians and everybody else in the entertainment world and things like that. So you see, they tried to put this in the movie, but yeah, to me, it just doesn't work.
This part of the story works. I mean, his failing marriage, how he's losing his wife basically to opium. Like, is it opium? No, it's laudanum. That's right. Which actually, they visit also in Deadwood.
Yeah,
you know, laudanum problems. So in that sense, that works.
Well,
so,
this
so
works because it motivates his character. It motivates his actions. It motivates what they
but
in
we,
the story.
But somehow we don't see the Dana Delaney, White Earp, I don't remember her character's name, how that motivates. But it doesn't motivate him positively in the story that we see on screen. Though it does motivate his life, which is a much harder thing to dramatize. Yeah. And maybe that's why.
Yeah.
No, that was but it was nice writing with the contrast between the two women and what they want and need and
absolutely it's just something about there's just a missing
or you know what it was maybe
piece.
Maybe they didn't set us up enough in advance that something was going to happen, you know what I mean, because that was like the longest scene that I don't know, people were just talking and chilling.
I like how the piano's out of tune.
Thomas Hayden Church,
that's good. A lot of light in that room. I'm sorry, I'll shut up.
Is the light motivated, Tim?
I'll shut up.
is it motivated? Not really.
I'm trying to see what's throwing all that light.
Lots of candles? Now, you see, that's well lit. Look at that.
That's a lot of candles.
But everything's motivated.
A lot of lanterns, a lot of candles. Wow, they like a lot of light in there. Opium den? Where are we at?
Yeah. Opium tent.
Watch old Powers Booth eating up the scenery right here. He's doing good. Pull him back in those theater days. Watch him.
You know what he's thinking right now? I wish I had a bigger mustache.
Yeah. Watch this.
Wow, look at those hands and fingers.
It's the fingers.
Could you fill me in on Powers Booth? What's he known for the most in his career? I'm having a hard time placing him.
Well, I mean, he's...
Oh, Keystone Lots of
what's
stuff.
Southern Comfort was a big hit.
Red Dawn. Red Dawn.
Deliverance and all that stuff.
He wasn't in Deliverance.
No. Right around the same time as Deliverance, and that time it was kind of like that Southern...
Southern Comfort was early 80s. Late 70s, early 80s. It? Yeah, Deliverance was early 70s.
You're right.
Okay.
But he's very good in Southern Comfort. He's a theater actor. He came up in theater. I think he did the... what was the name of he was in the original production of a famous play, and I'll think of it in a second, but he's a great Southern actor.
See, this is interesting. Here's the breakdown of the law. And basically now the sheriff's got to go face the crazed guy, and he knows he's going to get
killed. But the sheriff just pawned it off on the marshal.
Is that what happened? Yeah, okay.
Wyatt actually said, why don't you just leave it alone?
I'm thrilled they showed that moon.
Yeah, because now you see this big giant...
The street makes much more sense for the lighting.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm sure...
Tim, you're so about the lighting. I love you, man.
But his shadow is wrong to where the moon was coming from. Yeah. If you look at where he walked towards.
But the moon can't, especially I'm sure in the desert, can throw off a lot of light.
Now the moon makes sense, the lighting in that shot. Now, Harry Carey Jr. did all the John Ford movies, right?
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, Harry Carey Jr. is one of John Ford's favorites.
And I might be remembering this wrong as well, but I think Kurt Russell was the reason for a lot of these guys being in here.
Hmm. Ooh.
Saw that coming.
There's the butt to the head.
Well, that's a little late there, Wyatt. You just shot the marshal.
Well,
see, that's why I don't buy that crap.
You don't buy it? I buy
No. I don't buy the, well, you know, let's just let what's going to happen happen. I'm like, come on.
Here's a great. Watch Kurt Russell right here. A couple good lines in this scene.
Stephen, look at him. He dirties up well.
Is there a cat in the back?
Now, notice that three on the piece of wood right there. I wonder if that's a total just, they totally messed up. And it looks like somebody just put a piece of chalk and put a three on there, and that's when they built the set, and they just missed it whenever they were filming the scene. Right there by the sheriff and Denny Delaney. Watch right here.
This is a handheld scene.
Mm-hmm.
Except for that.
He's crazy.
No, he ain't bluffing.
Still that from Muhammad Ali.
That's Ali. Okay. Of course, now we have to refer to the that Star Trek episode where they wound up at the OK Corral, if we all remember
that. Well, hold on. Wait. Well, let's hear Val Kilmer's famous line right here.
anyway. That's a great line.
Sorry about that. Star Trek.
No. I have two guns, one for each of you. That is a great line.
You know, I mean.
No, well, let's go. But let's go. Actually, let's go to the script here. And what's great now is that they basically set it up where now they've avoided having to be the law, and now they're stepping in because they are able to wield their power, so to speak, and step in for the law.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because the law has become ineffective, and it definitely is needed in this town.
So as far as great lines, there could be a category of great Western lines based on math.
See that three right there?
Yeah.
On math. There's a three for math.
What is it?
When he said, I brought one gun for... I'm trying to tie it into what I'm saying.
I'm sorry.
When he said, I brought one gun for each of you?
Yeah.
Yes.
The line in Once Upon a Time of the West, you brought two horses too many.
Oh, yeah. You brought, yeah, two too many.
Charles
yeah.
Bronson's line.
They're like, well, we're short one horse.
Right.
Brought two too many.
Classic Western math lines.
Awesome, dudes. But
we'll have a class on Western math, exactly.
So here, if you want to talk script for a moment, 45 scene says, you know, that he and the girl are going to run away together, right, and
right.
get room service forever. But then right after the 45-minute scene, you get 46-minute scene, which isn't always 46, but right after, the two obstacles are one that he's married and his wife doesn't want to do that. And then the second thing is now he's assuming the law, the role of the law. And so that's the other thing that's going to stand in his obstacle to doing it.
Well, and
that's interesting. Okay,
it we just missed the scene right there where he basically told the story of how the Cowboys got out of not serving time for it, and Powers Booth is now out of jail.
So narratively, they just basically they skipped ahead because they could have shown it, which would have been a longer film. Actually, probably in like the OK Corral film, it would have taken time to get there, and it ends with the OK Corral.
Yeah.
But we know it doesn't end with the OK Corral.
But obviously in this movie they paint the good guys as the Earp brothers, and in actual history I hear tell that they use the law in order to get their way and sway themselves making money and things like that, and they use that as hey, we're the law. We can do whatever we want, and kind of push their way around. And that's why the Cowboys and them had the tiff. And it wasn't so much that the Cowboys are assholes running around shooting their guns in there. It was more of like, we're not going to settle for these guys doing this.
Well, okay. What was the impetus for the showdown at OK Corral?
What's that? I'm sorry.
What was the impetus?
Well, it's pretty true to the form right here. What happens is eventually one of the Cowboys gets killed, and then they attack their brothers. one of their brothers, Bill Paxton's character, really does die.
That's the guy from Lost, right?
And,
yes, it is.
And that's the thing. John Locke. And that really did happen. And it set off this Hatfield and McCoy kind of a thing.
So basically it was a feud.
Oh, most definitely.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I'm not that familiar with the legend.
So it's not too untrue with the way it kind of happens. And it's just, you know, they just always paint them as the good guys and stuff.
Well, because as you said, history was written that way. Of course, pull the kid out of the street.
Yeah, see how good of a guy he is? He's going to save dogs and children and everybody. Yeah. You know.
Well,
but, you know, you have to do that. But I would love to see a movie where they tell the other side. Maybe tell it that way and go, okay, this could have happened as well.
Oh, she's...
And then, of course, they got to show a scarred-up old woman. And he's like,
she's not old.
It's over. I can't handle this anymore.
That's right. I'm going to get my friend Patrick Swayze in on
her name. Her name is Cecil Hoffman, and she actually, if I remember correctly, was on L.A. Law.
That for woman like a with season a scar? Two.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, the season that John Spencer came on, she came on as a lawyer also.
Hmm.
Yeah, I thought she looked familiar.
So he's become sheriff.
Marshall, yeah.
Marshall.
Yeah. Don't worry, I said sheriff earlier too, so...
So, John, structure-wise, this falls into play?
Between 45 and 60. So we got the bad guy being bad, but this is a setup for now. The bad guy is going to be worse than we thought.
Now, the interesting thing...
And then that's going to spur the hero to react to that.
Mm-hmm. Now, and this is a problem I have with... I mean, it's... Totally entertaining film, really is. But in terms of structure-wise, the whole thing is Wyatt. I mean, typically, what would happen is Wyatt would become the marshal, right? And if you weren't going by structure, it would be Wyatt now, correct?
But I believe that this is historically correct.
No, it is historically correct. But my point, John, is that wouldn't it be Wyatt structurally? John was listening to the film.
I was sucked in, baby. I was there.
What I was saying is that structurally,
yes.
Normally, it would be Wyatt that would become the marshal at this point.
No. He will. And
so, if it's structural,
he's still fighting it.
Okay.
No. Structure wise, okay. The bad guy's worse than we thought. Yeah, it's all
okay. It all works.
Yeah.
Okay.
He doesn't want to be there.
Just doesn't want to be there. So he's fighting essentially his calling, so to speak.
Well, okay. And it makes him way more heroic to eventually say, "Okay, enough's enough," and now you've turned me.
And it's also good in a way because having guys run down the road shooting his gun is not going to push him into action.
Yeah.
He needs something that really pushes him
into
action.
He's got to have a lot more motivation.
Yeah. But otherwise, he doesn't hate being a lawman enough, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's a whole thing about him hating being a lawman, but he will go back to being a lawman. Yeah. I'm only saying this because my feeling is that this story, to do it justice...
Look at that. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it was a great shot. Yeah. Split diopter.
Yeah, thank you. I always forget that.
That's a problem. I watch Heroes at least first season. That's it.
Yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
No, my point is that the way the story and the... So I think it goes back to Kevin Sharer's whole epic approach because the whole story is epic. Because I think if I remember correctly, all the Wyatt Earp stories that came out basically spanned years, and there were many different stories. Mm-hmm. And in that same sense, that there was a TV show back in the day with Hugh O'Brien as Wyatt Earp, I believe. I think this is the kind of thing that would lend itself to a miniseries like Deadwood, where you would take the Wyatt Earp story and spread it out over 2, 3, 4 seasons, and then you could tell each part of his life where
it
feels like there's more to it. Here, this is trying to cram a lot
into a
smaller arc, which has been traditionally done in terms of movies.
And we also don't know,
and we see that more
lost in the production.
And we also see that more in the Wyatt Earp film that Kasdan did, where he spans more years.
Yeah. At that time, Costner was still hot, and he probably was able to use some juice to get it. A few more script pages added in.
Well, he did that right after Dances with Wolves?
Not right after, but shortly after. It's right at, Dances was 90, I think, so. But here's a good scene.
So he's been playing for 36 hours straight.
And he's got all the best dialogue. Watch. Tim, you wonder why he's legendary in this part.
Right. The consumption is getting him. Look at that makeup.
No.
I've not yet begun to defy myself. What a cool line. And look at her.
Joanna Pakula had been in some things around that time, I guess. Gorky Park and a few other things. You know, the interesting thing is here, which we don't see often, is you see essentially the two sides, the opponents essentially interacting. And here over gambling, essentially.
Yeah. Oops.
We know what Val Kilmer, his character, is drinking out of that cup?
Oh, I don't know. Watch this right here, though. Listen to this line. He plays a good drunk.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. He's great.
Watch right here. This is the line. This is the best. That is just. And notice Val Kilmer is just dying laughing. Just his, or Doc Holliday, anyway. And now everybody notice how Sam Elliott dwarfs this man that looks like a monster in Avatar. I mean, and look at Sam Elliott. Just this is what a real man looks like, kid. I like how he, at one moment, is just, like, fighting mad, and the next moment, Ike is just cowering like a puppy dog. He's like, oh, I think I went too far. So as an actor, he does a great, fantastic job in that.
Actually, I was reading that, you know, he calls him a pimp, and actually, what basically, their wives had been prostitutes before, and actually, they would still pimp them out every once in a while to make money.
Nice. Is that for real?
Oh, for real, yeah.
Nice.
I don't know.
So actually, he's referenced him as a pimp.
He's referencing the fact that they were pimps for the politicians and the law and
that
themselves.
Could be that.
Maybe
it could be that too. But oh,
he whacked him too. Now look how long this shot is. It's a good shot. He's got his fangs back all of a sudden.
That was clumsy.
But it works because it's not, you know.
No, it doesn't.
Shaky cam. Come on.
You know how hard you got to hit somebody on the head and knock them out?
That's true.
Like, you got to hit.
But that happens in every movie. You know, it's like, let's punch a guy and leave him there for 35 minutes while I go rob this safe.
It looked
like a
master
shot. You know,
it works
all the time for me.
I tell you.
When I need someone to be out for two scenes.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Boom,
and then, you know, a good swift rap on the back of the head and he's out for an hour and a half.
Uh-oh. I discover a lot in the bottle.
Apparently, she's not a very good liar.
She's not very good at recycling.
She's like, what? That's only 2 days worth.
I like how he's got
this
like,
is the
know,
added,
some shaving
This is the added scene.
Oh, this is the added scene?
This is not in the original.
I don't seem to remember. That's interesting.
Well, that's a good question. Are we podcasting a movie that a lot of people won't be seeing?
Is this a special edition?
This is the one that came from Netflix. So okay. I'm assuming this is the one that's been out on DVD for a while.
Well, there's a new director's cut out.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a special edition.
So, well, you know what? It'll be okay.
See?
It'll be all right, Curtis.
I'm not worried about it. I'm sure somebody could figure it out.
See, it's great because. No.
Yeah.
I'll do anything else, though.
Yeah, so in the once again, it gets back to the structure of the film, the whole wife romance subplot, so to speak, doesn't work as well with this character, at least with what they've set up. With all the testosterone, essentially. It does actually conflict with the testosterone.
Yeah, but I do like how they threw it back in his face that he's part of the problem that she's got.
Well, of course he's the problem, because he's got eyes for someone else.
Yeah. Let's do this real quick for anybody that wasn't watching the special edition. We're now in the jail scene where they're taking Ike out of the jail cell.
Oh, okay, very good. Yeah.
So it cuts right to that, where he's waking up out of the bed and leaning forward. You're going to give Ike back his gun, is what we just saw. Sam's the man. Look at Sam. I also heard some story that, here, watching right here, once again, to use the butt of the gun. It's a Southern saying they just don't use anymore. Take Sar and shove it up your ass. How about that one? Would that put him down?
That was good.
That was a better one?
Because it didn't knock him out.
It just hurt a lot.
Yeah. Well, that was intercut as well. The last one we saw was just the master shot, and that's why it looked weaker.
Yeah. Well, also, if you looked, Sam Elliott actually, he started moving before the timing was.
Isn't he the goofy guy from Airplane movie?
Wings.
Wings.
Thomas Hayden Church.
Thomas Hayden Church.
I'm not scared of him. I can take him.
Another look at this. Split diopter.
There you go. It's a great shot. Yeah.
Yeah, Thomas Hayden Church played Lowell. Remember his character Lowell in Wings? The handy guy. He was funny.
So what do you think so far, Tim?
I like it.
From what you can hear?
Yeah. The story-wise and what they're saying, I'm not too up on. but its look and its
is
the
it
ensemble.
Is it working for me.
But how about
it's working for you visually?
It's working for me as a Western, first off.
I mean, like, look at that shot right there where they pan from, you know, one window to the next. It's classic.
It has nice work in it.
I also really like the relationship between these two.
Yeah.
Nobody's nagging each other.
Well, it's understated, but understood.
So then why, and I'm sorry to diverge, Tim, but why is it that their relationship seems to work better than Wyatt's and Dana's?
Well, theirs doesn't punch you in the face quite as much, and like I said, I feel that this is more understated. I mean, you get obvious things, like, you know, I mean, you get these scenes where it's obvious what she's there for.
That's true. I mean, there's nothing at stake here. It's not like she's taking him away from anyone else.
Yeah.
Whereas with Wyatt, it's the whole thing that he's married and will he go with her or not, that kind of thing. Here, there's no stake. It's just their relationship, and it's just a relationship to his
living. Unless she wants to kill him.
Well, no, she's a strong... she's a strong woman and he's a strong man, but at the time I would assume that a woman needed a man to get through the West and whatever, and she knows that, and she's protecting him, you know, and being the best woman she can. That's a great line.
You may be the Antichrist. He's got some great lines.
Yeah. How about this yellow
dusters? Right here in it.
Yeah. Oh, well, dusters. There you go.
Regardless of sex.
Equal pay. So I guess this is heading towards OK Corral.
It's been going on for a long...
No, isn't... No, I don't even remember.
OK Corral can't be the middle of the movie, is it?
Yeah, it is. No. That's the thing. It is.
Right here. This
structurally, it's in a different place in another movies.
Another six.
That was and this was the significant difference that this did with telling the story.
Mm-hmm.
The showdown was not at the end.
Yeah.
Do we know what time of day the actual shootout took place?
It's very well known, but I couldn't recall it off the top
it
of my
is,
head right
it
now.
It is well known. Yeah. I know, because the lighting doesn't match the time of day I got it.
You can go online and actually see maps. You can actually see, Tim's like, I'm only asking for
No, that's looking like early morning. I'm sorry.
I want to be very hooked up on what's going on here with the lighting.
I'm just wondering where the light's coming from. Oh, thank God the sun. Well, I mean, thank God the sun is up.
Yeah. If you do go online and a lot of the old West books, you can actually see maps.
Okay, that's a great shot. That's a great shot there.
Yes.
When it just was on the barrel, and he's bringing out his old gun, the Peacemaker. Sweet. Now you know he means business, because he hasn't taken it out
until
now. Split diopter.
Yeah, using that beam as the
separate separation point. I can go online and look at maps to see
maps of where the actual OK Corral happened, where men ran away and then got shot down the street, and so they do the whole thing. You know, they see where the guy escaped, different various characters in this OK Corral escaped to, and where there were guys in certain buildings that were shooting out, and so
they show you the entire topography, locations, and chronology.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I like the American flag over his head, just you know, symbolism.
That's interesting. Why it keeps on saying let them go on? It's let it ride, and it's interesting to have Virgil saying, "No, this has got to stop."
Yeah.
And Bill Paxton spitting tobacco.
Well, and see, and this is another point that people make, that Doc Holliday's not a man of the law at all.
No, he's not.
He's very lawless, actually. And that was the big criticism from the Cowboys. It's like, listen, here you are, best friends with this gambling card player, the most unhonest person in this town, and you're being a hypocrite. Here you are telling us what to do, blah, blah, blah. And not only that, but they use Doc Holliday to come down there and help disarm these guys.
So that was the whole thing, to go down and disarm them.
Yes.
They were holed up basically at OK Corral.
Well, and once again, that is a possible myth as well. A lot of people don't know. They think that the Earps went down there on purpose, because if you look at the actual...
Well, Kurt Russell knows.
It's a fantastic... Why is there a building
burning? We always said the same thing. Why is there a building on fire? You know, it's like, well, you know, it just makes perfect sense in a Western, right?
It's like, and there's only one guy. I mean, would anyone notice? Wouldn't it threaten to burn down the town? Wouldn't they be concerned?
That's a good point. I wonder if actually there was a building burning in the actual... I'll have to go back and look now.
Or maybe that. Maybe actually there's a subplot that they cut away from, that they cut out. I don't know.
Well,
this
anyway...
This is all great stuff.
So if you think about the actual...
Okay, that was cheap. I don't like that kind of crap.
The actual, if you think about an actual, what am I trying to think of here? In a battle, to have an advantage over your enemy, they actually have a better, I mean, they box in the Cowboys. That's the point. And that's why a lot of people believe that this was actually a killing, like where the Earps went down there to kill them.
Oh, I think so.
Because they cornered them, and they're in this corner.
Okay, yeah. So now you just said he went down and disarmed them. And then they're still going to do it.
Exactly. So they're still going down.
Because Virgil
is... Oh, Virgil. Virgil wants to kill them.
Virgil's the marshal. He wants to kill them.
Yeah.
What the hell is that?
I don't know. She took her own picture, and it was dramatic.
So now, here they are, now boxed in by them.
Do they really don't have guns, then?
No, they have guns.
Oh, they have guns.
And it is true, though, that Doc Holliday did have a shotgun. So, I mean, all this stuff is pretty well documented.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I like this. Boomp.
Yep.
And what is a shootout in a movie without a fanning shot of the gun?
I'm going to Alaska to be a DJ.
That's a nice shot through there.
I like how they show how this starts with just a few looks and trend, and you know, they know that these two guys hate each other.
We're almost getting Leone here.
Oh, yeah. This is very, very Leone. Look.
And who starts it all? Watch. Doink.
Right there you go.
Oh.
Boy.
He sees it.
Oh.
Nice.
And this really did happen. He begged for his life, and I'm not in this. But yet, once again,
that's
this
what that
did,
was about.
This did happen too. He goes now in this room, and he starts shooting out of the room. Watch right here. Here you go.
Oh.
Ooh, nice shooting valve.
Boom, boom, boom.
Is he dead?
Either that or really pissed off.
No, they fired him about six different shots.
Yeah, and when did he reload, by the way? Just wondering.
Oh, there's lots of not reloading. And, of course, she's right there.
Oh, my Lord.
And there it's done. Oh, man.
And supposedly there was an exchange between these two, if I remember correctly.
Ooh.
Shazam.
You're a daisy if you do. Look at him.
That was,
he looks great.
Documented, you're a daisy if you do is supposed to actually have been said. Correct?
Oh, absolutely. I have no doubt that a lot of this stuff was actually said. And there's the sheriff. That's the mayor, Terry O'Quinn, John Locke.
Oh, John Locke's mayor.
John Locke's a mayor.
Poor son of a bitch, the rest of his life, John Locke.
And now the sheriff shows up.
Nice. I like his reply, though.
That was handheld.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, romantic movie.
I love you, music. My lady in purple.
Exactly. It's Dana Delaney in purple.
You are such a man. I just saw you kill all these people, and I think I love you more.
They were bad men.
And, of course, there's his wife.
Nice
rack. The laudanum.
Focus.
Yeah. Oh.
Why, Tim?
Now that's his brother.
Nice
Bill,
clouds.
Right? Bill Paxton is his brother.
Bill Paxton is the
epic
younger brother.
Shot, right?
They've had very nice clouds throughout this movie.
That's Paula Malcolmson right there. Look at her.
Who's I don't know who Paula is.
Paula Malcolmson was in Deadwood. She played the prostitute. I don't remember her name.
Is Deadwood, is that the name of a porn for elderly people?
Oh, my goodness.
Nice.
Oh, never mind. I'm
did
sorry.
You just say that?
No, I didn't.
You know, I don't edit these again. Things, so I can't That's go back right. and cut that out.
Deadwood.
Dude. Deadwood was an awesome show.
Yep, and here are the two dudes.
Oh, yeah, Virgil right. went down to start the whole thing.
In this story.
That's nice.
That's good makeup, actually. That's the way they used to do them,
yeah,
correct?
Well, I would assume. Yeah. That's nice rouge. Yeah,
that's the best dead guy, too, that just droopy face. But, and once again, if you go back and you read the stories, we keep saying this, or I keep saying this, I should say, that they did have this huge, huge funeral for these cowboys.
Oh, wow.
That really did happen, and they really did carry these signs of protest through the streets, and people in the town started taking sides, actually, that weren't the cowboys or the Earps.
Mm. Right.
Very nice shot. Kurt Russell in front of the
What was the name
sunset.
Of the graveyard? Was it
know.
Knob Hill?
Yeah.
No.
I know Boot Hill.
Oh, I think it was Boot Hill.
There you go.
Actually, let me tell you, for Twilight shooting, this is really nice. Look at that.
Yeah, they only had so much time to do that. Very nice.
Well, in this, you know, they use the brother character to show the wisdom of Wyatt Earp. Already, he's like, okay, see, you're right, I know. And,
yeah.
And it's even going to come back even tenfold here in a few minutes.
Yeah.
Where he's more than right again.
Yeah.
And for those listeners, we're just assuming that you've seen this before, unlike our colleague Tim.
Sorry.
So now we've moved ahead in time.
This is 2 hours, 10 minutes. Yeah.
Speaking of perfect casting, he plays a very good effeminate man. Sorry, Jason, if you're listening to this. But finally cast properly.
Oh, my goodness.
I've been on the alert for Chuck, and I have not seen him yet.
It'll happen.
Okay.
Oh, there's Johnny Ringo.
Here comes another famous Doc Holliday. Did you see that shot with Sam Elliott right next to the hotel? That was really nice.
Sorry, I missed it.
Now, how far in are we?
Right here in River City.
Yeah, I liked how Val Kilmer there, how Doc was like reaching for his
Easy,
gun.
Easy, Tim.
I hear everything.
76 trombones.
John, how far in are we?
What?
How far in are we, John?
I don't know. I'm all wrapped up. I'm Yoko concerned Barry. About Johnny Ringo.
I like he said. I like that line. He's like,
no, I like how blood. He's walking, and there's the gun behind him.
And he won't play for blood, and he's like, and that's just my game.
This is. I'm assuming this is the 75 minute scene where somebody comes to help him.
Like that shot right there. That's just a continuation from the earlier shot where Samuel had stepped forward right. to that hotel like that. Nice up angle at him right
there. A lot of exterior location shooting in this movie.
Right there. Great shot.
Now, were the cowboys actually criminals?
Well, that's the point of contention.
That's what Curtis keeps people saying. They're not.
And here it is. They're lawmen. No guns in town. What's Doc Holliday doing?
Yeah.
Walking around loaded bear.
That's right. Because,
you know.
Yep, because they can do whatever they want.
What does lightning mean in a movie, Tim? What do you think's going to happen?
Tim?
Lightning?
Foreshadowing here?
I think...
You foreshadowing, Tim, so being that you've never seen this? What do you think?
Lightning,
good things are going to happen, right?
No, I don't think it's a thing for good. I think it's an omen of bad things coming our way.
What about her wearing red, maybe?
No. Red and lightning together?
Red and lightning. Oh, now we're talking.
Now we're talking about red lightning.
What about this music at the same time on top of the red?
I think we're in for a party. I think it's going to be someone's surprise birthday party.
This is another split diopter shot. Yeah, that was.
So, yeah, a little cliche. Saying,
after tonight, one man.
I keep wanting to shave my mustache to look like that guy's, just on the side of his lips. But I just can't work up the courage to do it.
Now, Tim, you had seen, you saw Sturges.
Gunfight at the OK Corral.
Yeah, so it ended with.
The gunfight, as
the
I
gunfight,
recall.
And that was it.
It was long sequence. It was like 15 minutes.
Yeah. Right.
I would say this is going to be the end of second act.
And
right
then that
here.
Was it. But now what this story does is then says that was not the end of it, because then there was much more that happened, and this is the next big thing that happened.
I know that Gunfight at OK Corral took great artistic license you know, to be a entertainment piece.
I'm just saying it's interesting that the movies up until that, you know, up until here, always portrayed this story as going up until Correct. OK Corral. And then OK Corral was it. There was nothing ever after that.
Now, what was the Kirk Douglas OK Corral movie?
John Sturges, Burt Lancaster and Kirk Douglas and Gunfight at OK Corral with Joe Van Fleet.
This is the '50s. Those are tarot cards.
It was a VistaVision picture.
Jesus doing.
Mm-hmm. No, I've got some laudanum in the trunk.
And you've never seen the Gunfight at OK Corral?
I haven't actually seen that one. No, that's one of the few I've missed as far as the classic westerns. And I don't know why. And there's
it's
no,
good. Lancaster
and
Douglas are wonderful in it. And it's
Wait,
a good old
Burt
western.
Lancaster's good?
I like Burt Lancaster.
That guy could chew rocks. I love him. Yeah. Boom. Boom. Boy. Now, what was that whole thing?
Little Red Riding Hood had a
vengeance. Yeah, a little Mason kind of like big.
See, some of this stuff isn't as staged as well.
As a good actor character piece, like look, see, he was shot in the arm at the OK, Bill Paxton was at the OK Corral, and he's got this ball rehabilitating his hand, and he's been rolling that in this whole scene before this too.
Right.
So that's kind of interesting as an actor to do that.
I want to say the special effects for the lightning are very good. Not these, but the ones when you see the sky.
Does he got a knife in him or something? Is this? I don't even remember that. But
that's not good.
He was shot. And
and basically the lightning was covering up the shooting.
Yeah,
right.
And and once again, whenever this attack happened, it was supposedly a stormy night and blah blah blah. So anyway,
there you go.
Well, actually, the combination of visual effects and also second unit. the right time of the year. Actually, you've got lots of lightning storms, right, in Arizona.
Arizona monsoons come through as far as August, especially July, August. You get electrical storms, like pretty much what you were just watching.
And now, watch these scenes right here. What I like about it is just good filmmaking in these scenes is the chaos that they create with what they have available to them to create chaos. I mean, obviously, Sam Elliott's been shot, and Virgil Earth's been shot, and he's going to lose his arm for his life. He won't be able to use it anymore. But, I mean, all this is happening. But when the Bill Paxton scene happens, talk about acting. Watch Kurt Russell in that scene here in a second.
But once again, going back to the script, within the film, now you have White saying, you see what's happening. We have to get out of here. And they're like, no, we can't get out of here. It's like, yes, go. And, of course, script-wise,
Bill Paxton's character also goes. Kurt Russell's character is losing control. He's like, what am I doing? I've told you. And then now he's got all
because
these things going on around
because he knew if you came up against them, this is how it would end.
Yeah, exactly. I told you. You don't do this. And I believe, you know, this is great motivation for his character, whether it was a true story or not. Now this leads him to, you know what, the only way this is going to be done right is if I'm the boss and I'm the one ahead in charge to make the right decisions and lead this. And now this always bumped me. All of a sudden, this guy's going to throw down his little red sash and be like, oh, yeah, I killed brides and I killed, shot up people in the name of the Cowboys. And all of a sudden, now I'm going to turn and be a good guy.
Short, I mean, basically, it's shorthand.
Yeah.
It's saying some of those guys
did have a conscience, you know.
Well,
went along with
as much as once again this film is shorthand because we're not getting the full taste of the morality.
Sure.
You want full morality, you go to Deadwood where they have the time each episode to really
So the bad guys were like two different gangs together and one gang just broke off.
They were the Cowboys. He was with the two good guys that they saw earlier that did that shootout that knew Doc Holliday and Wyatt Earp and everybody else. Right. And he was just saying, you know what, I just want you to know.
So in a way, this is like The Godfather.
In what way?
In that they're going out quietly and killing people and we're not seeing them do it.
Oh, that's right.
There you go.
Oh, yeah, there was a bit of that slow-mo
in
Kurt Russell.
He drops this ash. And now watch the chaos they create in this scene right here. I really like it.
That's a lot of blood. And the dog barks.
Of course, there's the dog.
And now listen to Kurt Russell. He's so good in this scene. Watch. And then watch the close-up here on Kurt. This is acting, kids.
Someone shut the dog up.
This is acting. And he'll do it again, too. Listen. Yeah. Now he's lost all control and he can't do anything about it.
Is he going to talk about the tunnel of light?
Yeah, watch.
Tunnel of light. That's great.
Watch Kurt, though. Good death, Bill.
That is.
Watch Game Kurt. Over, watch man. Sleeves.
See, I like script-wise that...
Never an acting lesson, kids.
So it's subvert. Well, he's natural. He's a natural.
But look at that.
Yeah, way to hang in there.
Kurt's awesome. I mean, even in something so silly as Grindhouse, the Quentin Tarantino film, whenever he's at the end, when he's pouring that whiskey on his shoulder, if anybody's ever seen it, oh, he's amazing. Mm-hmm. He's like, just playing it like nobody else was. And then you think about Mickey Rourke was fired from that movie, and Kurt Russell took his place.
Oh, wow.
Oh, Mickey Rourke was going to do Death Proof?
He was going to do Death Proof. Nice. And I don't know how it happened. I don't know if Quentin fired him. I don't know if, you know, what, I don't know the whole story behind it. But either way, Kurt Russell took his part. And it makes you wonder, what would Mickey Rourke have done? And I mean, not that he would have been bad, but it's such the difference in the choices.
You know, I got to say, this makes me want to watch Wyatt Earp again.
To see the difference.
To see the differences, yeah.
But there's so much alike in, obvious scenes, because much of the history that's written down.
Right. And but they are different films.
This is one long shot of him standing in the rain.
And boy, is that a lot of rain, kids. Yeah. Now, you can see the rain towers where they stop right here.
Just a little further.
The horizon is dry.
Yeah. I like good... Wait. Once again, there's a new scene. Wow. I have not seen this.
Neither have I.
That is an amazing shot, and I've never seen it.
I love all the black. I love
my
the
lord.
Water
and
on
what
his face
a great
the window.
Job. It's about, once again, Val Kilmer in this movie, but my lord. Okay, now we're back to the Ringo and everybody on the porch, so for all you other people that might be watching this differently. But man, that was a great scene. Just that little
bit. It was an actor's moment. But I mean, it was great. His little monologue.
So this is the, you know, obviously when his brothers die, it's really the end of Act Two.
Right.
And all along, people have been telling him he's got to fight.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And he's just said, I'm not going to. Yeah.
Right. And he's not going to again. And then we'll see when he changes his mind soon.
See, but those scenes weren't in the Blu-ray version I just saw either. That was just recently released. So,
I'm sorry. Thank you, Netflix.
We
appreciate it.
Yeah.
Oh, Dana.
There's the OK Corral right there.
Actor, her character's name is Josephine Marcus. Yep, there's the OK Corral. And so they're leaving town? Is that what it is?
That it be.
Yes.
Okay.
Was this about 93? Was this about the same time that Young Guns came out?
Oh, no. Young Guns was
Young
in
Guns
the
80s. Was 80s.
Yeah, like 87
oh, was
or
80s?
So.
Wow.
But 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon, who's in Young Guns? John Locke.
Oh, he is? Terry O'Quinn?
Terry O'Quinn.
Oh, my God. A younger Terry O'Quinn.
Listen. Kurt Russell's good. And you'll like this music cue coming up here, Tim. There's a fantastic music cue in tone with the picture. Fits exactly right in. You'll see why Jerry Goldsmith recommended this guy, because there's a moment here in just a second. And this is also the reason why they call this movie Test Drone instead of Tombstone, because it's one of those hair on your arm standing up moments with Kurt Russell saying a line here in a second. Oh, another scene?
Yeah, this is new.
Damn. I'm going to borrow this version.
I'm a sucker for interior barn scenes. Shafts of light, add a little mist, fog.
I can see why this scene was cut.
Yeah,
that seems normal. Yeah.
Except for that last line. I calculate.
That seems a little cold.
But he's right. It's great.
Well, but he knew the essence of it. Now we're doing the exterior shot, and now we're at the train station for anybody that's on a different DVD. And I like the train name, number 5150. Do we know what the reference of 5150 is?
Yes, I do.
So this is the scene that I saw literally just 2 weeks ago on television.
Yeah, here it is. Listen to this.
Whoa.
Here's the music cue, Tim, coming up here. There's a great line, great scene, boom, boom, boom. This is all a ploy.
I have to say, number 5150, is that the police code for out-of-control crazy person?
Crazy.
Really? Nice.
Yeah. So anyway, so watch right here. This line, Kurt Russell has a nice, heroic moment.
Nice smoke, by the way.
He's going to have a great camera underneath, walking into camera shot here.
I like the spurs. He's got the spurs on.
Fantastic, well-written line.
Oh! See, there's a spurs cut in his face.
Here we go, Tim. This is what Western movies are made for right here.
Yeah.
Revenge. I've been playing little boy games up till now.
So this is the beginning of the third act, and also we got six horses, which is
that's
the
like
six
Basil Polidorus. That's like Basil Polidorus.
Yeah, exactly. Right with there, the clanking. Oh, I'm telling you, I got to go to the bathroom. I think I've got to take care of something.
That was symbolic. That train left the station.
Was that a great music cue?
That's cool.
Whoa,
dig it.
It built nicely.
But what a great delivery of the line too by Kurt Russell. Yeah. That's understated, and you say that people. And once again, this is a guy that doesn't get mentioned in the acting categories. And these are great classic
nice
Western
telephoto
shots.
And so this is. I mean, this is all. It's montage-y.
No, that the hell's coming with me. Every actor gives his eye teeth to be able to do a scene like that.
Chew it up, boy.
Oh, that's cold.
Now, why would you actually toss your buddy a gun? Here you go. Use mine.
Because he ran out of bullets.
Great writer, whoever that is on that.
You're good, Michael Rooker.
And this being said, for all these actors here, when they show these wide shots
of
them, they're doing a great job.
That blood effect was good.
And you know who's a good writer when they show it is, Kurt Russell, we already established earlier, but Val Kilmer here in a second.
Oh, okay.
Here's a great shot. And I mean a great shot.
No, don't do it.
You don't have to be a great shot when you have the end of your gun in someone's mouth.
That's like, how do you make killing funny?
And still I just did it. Come on now.
Yeah.
See, listen to these classic Western sounds.
Dinah Hingham.
That's almost a pull-away shot from Once Upon a Time in the West.
Yeah.
Where the guy...
And now this is...
And I never liked the lighting in this scene. I always felt like it was a second unit thing.
But
or
this gets back
last
to what?
Minute.
No. This gets back to what I said. Is that?
See, it looks very TV movie right
but
here.
But this is the shootout scene. That in Wyatt Earp, this is really well staged. They set it up, and they set it up script wise, and they set it up visually.
Uh-huh.
Here, they just get into it, and they're all pinned down, and it just doesn't play as well. But in the Kasdan version, much much more dynamic.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I don't know what happened here.
I don't know if they were
production
running short on
time.
It's
also didn't. There was no setup. It's
that's the thing.
They're just riding along. These guys are just camping out and.
Well, but that's what they went right. They went right from the montage, which essentially all that was, into this, and just like it happens.
Yeah, there was.
Whereas once again, in the Kasdan version, it was all set up.
Right.
And
it's
made as a thing of stuff of legend, and that's the way it's played. See?
Hey, powers is...
Both barrels.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus Christ. He created chaos by going out there.
I still don't know, man. I can't see running out into the open.
Well, but that goes back to what the legend, what the story was, and yeah, that's how they staged it.
Yeah.
It let plays
Tim,
out.
Let Tim hear this like line here real quick. I'm sorry.
But it's true. I mean, have you guys ever shot a gun? It's not really that easy. I mean, you're off by like a quarter of an inch. The bullet goes way off. I mean, it's not that easy to hit somebody.
Well, no, I mean, that's one thing that this movie on certain points, okay, yeah. Corral and right there, in actuality, in real life, you hear of documented gunfights in alleyways in New York City and things like that, mm-hmm. where there's 40, 50 shots fired and nobody's hit.
Right,
you know, I mean,
right.
That really does happen yep. because you really do like, holy shit, this guy's shooting at me and you're not, yeah, you're right. not looking, you're not squaring your chest up yeah, and going, right, I am right. shooting you. Right. You run, turn and you shoot.
But right. this gets right. back to the whole yeah. thing about the wider story is that it was all based on all these stories that were written about Wyatt Earp. We don't know if they were true or
yeah.
not, but it's all because that's the legend, how Wyatt Earp as a subject matter came to be so big is because so much was written about Wyatt Earp mm-hmm. as opposed to any other person here
yeah.
or there.
And yeah, and there was such a legend that came over.
Well, exactly, and so that's where we have that.
And now, if that's really true, that the Cowboys were once deputized as well, eventually... Why is that? Is that because they just know people, or was it that they actually thought that the Earps were a little lawless themselves, and so somebody else was like, wait a minute, we got to stop this also.
Oh.
Look at the shot right
here
yeah,
in the
window.
Yeah, the reflection in the stagecoach window.
I mean, and really, it's like, why is Jason Priestley's character in this movie? I mean, it's there's little things like that that I would like to read the actual other script. Mm-hmm. Like, what is all this?
Right.
I mean, we obviously know why they have him in there, but do we need him in there?
I think it's part of the larger tapestry of the story.
We only shared one night together. Hey, so, come on. Am I the only one that picks up on this? So come on, seriously.
Now, how does this pay off with Billy?
It doesn't. That's the point. There, nothing comes of it.
So basically, Johnny Ringo and all those guys got themselves deputized?
Yeah, yeah, and that's where my reading kind of stopped. And maybe it's true. Maybe it's just for the sake of this film.
But if he's a marshal and they're deputized, and there's a whole bunch of deputies and marshals chasing each other,
different jurisdictions, and blah blah blah.
Okay, all right.
Classic shot.
Doesn't bode well.
Ah, where are they going to hold up? Oh, that's not good.
Oh, Doc just died.
No, he didn't die. He's just bleeding in the mouth.
He's just bleeding to death from the inside.
I'll bet Val Kilmer did not like the fact that he was on location so much, getting a suntan when he had to be so white for his character.
Here we go.
Who's that voice?
Oh.
Oh, my God, it's Charlton Heston.
Yeah, it's Charlton Heston. Here we go.
That's it.
Are you not sitting at the same table as us?
We mentioned Charlton yeah. Heston before. John, have you been listening?
No, I haven't. I got sucked in.
Oh. He's watching this movie, yeah. man.
Hello. Which one am I?
There you go.
Oh, testing 1, 2, 2, 2.
Yeah, no,
making
it's,
sure it's not falling.
It's on.
I hope it's recording.
Oh, yeah, we're recording. It's got that nice bright red light.
I think, is that all for
Trump? We're looking at a nicely lit shot of Kurt Russell there. Right.
And there's Dana Delaney again. Josephine.
No, wait, she's stopping at the same place?
It's all coincidence, you know? Come on.
I don't know about
you know,
movie coincidences happen.
It's Henry Hooker's Way Station.
See, what I like about these scenes are the shadows.
Honey, I hear violins and I love you.
Backlit. This is a nice melody for this, mm-hmm. the theme. Mm-hmm. Is this almost the end of the movie?
He's got.
This is where I start having problems with the movie.
Well, he's got to kill Ringo, right?
No. It's been a while. I don't remember.
Yeah, no. We've got a couple, a little bit to go.
Well, it's 2 hours and 10 minutes.
Right. What's your stopwatch say?
I don't know. I started it when we started talking. It says like 3 hours now or something.
You don't.
That's a great stopwatch you got there, John.
Well, it doesn't. Yeah.
How does it say 3 hours? That's a bit three. That's a nice sky.
That's a filter.
Yeah, that's a filter.
Oh, that's an absolute filter. Graduated filter.
Yeah.
Is that Chuck?
No, that's
Where
Kurt
to
Russell.
Graduate mm-hmm. from? Film school?
Mm-hmm. Go. Flat, nope. Another flat added lighting. Scene. Hold on. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we're watching the scene where they're in the desert, and I've never seen this version at all. So,
oh, so this is good. Another addition.
Oh no, scene. They're showing in the other version that is the most available version.
Right?
They we don't see this scene. We just see him in the aftermath.
Oh, I guess they're going to do something bad to him.
What'd he get that? How'd he get this message? Carrier pigeon?
Well, they're not outlaws. They're around, so they can get the message to him.
Personally, I'm sort of losing connection with the film.
Well, I can see exactly why you would eliminate this scene.
Why would you ride right into the bad guy's camp?
Yeah. Well, that's, yeah, and I think that's probably why it was cut out in the first place.
Because somebody got to have some more run here.
Well, they wanted to probably put out another edition, so they wanted to add some scenes, so...
Yeah. Go around scaring.
Good old Stephen Lang. What a great actor.
Yeah, didn't see that coming.
And
huh?
This is now the scene where Michael Rooker's being dragged by the horse, and they just now dropping him off, and Kurt Russell's running off the porch as we speak.
Okay, Kurt, pull out your gun, shoot the guy. See, that's why I like Clint Eastwood westerns, because that's what they would do.
Shoot him from 3,000 yards away with a 45 pistol?
No, with a rifle. What are you talking about?
Notice how, I mean, sometimes Kurt Russell's acting like a caged lion sometimes, like this.
Okay, maybe it's a Silver Springs Canyon shootout that's done in the Wyatt Earp movie. And I've confused them.
It's been a long time since I've seen it.
Once again, nice guy. Nice guy. Nothing like shooting a desert.
Is his name pronounced Michael Bain, Michael Bine?
Michael Bean.
Bean, yeah.
He was quite an actor. And
I've wondered where he's been the last few years.
I don't know. Val.
See, and now all of a sudden it's become a Val Kilmer and Kurt Russell buddy picture. You know, it's like the two of them and my friendship. Mm-hmm. So it's like, that's where I mean, like, there's so many... I mean, it's still a good film to me because of all the small things that are good about what you are seeing and the fact that you're seeing classic Western shots and all that stuff. I can watch it and always enjoy it, but it just feels like things were piecemealed together instead of a one constant idea.
Well, but that gets back to my point about the story is too big maybe to tell. I mean, it's too big. It's very difficult with the canvas of the story you have to tell in one in a film that maybe a TV series, a miniseries, or something like HBO
Lonesome
would be better.
Lonesome Dove, best Western on the face of the planet.
Exactly.
For
that's
that reason.
Why.
Because
you have a lot of little stories.
6.5 hours to tell the story.
Right. And usually the best things in movies are short stories, and this is not a short story.
That was a really powerful statement.
What would you say?
The giant Ringo, Quirrell goes, what does he want? And Doc says, he's got a hole in his chest he can't fill with anything he steals or what he kills.
Yeah.
And what's he angry about? Or what's he want? Revenge. And he goes, revenge for what? And Doc Holliday goes, for being born.
Yeah, it's a good name.
And that's like, Johnny Ringo?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Hang on. This is interesting. He says, I can't beat him. This is really cool.
And this is in the original version,
of course,
the way. Yeah. But yes. What's more prophetic about what Val Kilmer's saying is that he's speaking from experience. He knows why he's reckless. He knows why Johnny Ringo is the way he is. Because
he's the mirror. Right. And he hates him.
Yeah, exactly.
Because he hates himself.
And we've already been that's good setup and payoff from before and now.
But the thing now here structurally is that script wise is that now all of essentially Wyatt's help is going away.
Right.
He's going to have to wind up doing all this himself.
Yeah.
Which is classic movie.
And it doesn't look like he's going to win.
Classic Western setup.
Well, it's
classic. I mean, even Star Wars, Luke's got to do it on his own. Yeah. He doesn't have the Force. He doesn't have Obi-Wan. Well, I mean, he doesn't even have R2. It's him.
He doesn't have the ships.
But he's got Charlton Heston.
I mean, as far as High Noon.
Hang on.
You know, Gary Cooper.
Yeah. Chuck will stop him.
Sweet.
Giddy up.
Got to come through Charlton Heston to get to.
I think I heard a rumor too, like these two guys that I don't know who the actors are. I don't think they are actors. Those two gentlemen that are playing Creek Johnson.
They're probably
stunt
guys.
They were given these parts and they had never done anything before.
Nice.
If I remember correctly. Might be wrong, but.
And that's the sound of the desert, what you're hearing back there.
Oh, that is?
The buzzing. Mm. Yeah, you hear that a lot. That was original sound right there.
That's cool. Oh, my God.
What?
It's Doc. There you go.
That used to be my email inbox anytime I get a new email.
I'm your Huckleberry. And script-wise, it's fitting that he should be the one to do that. Oh, they just changed the lighting on him.
It's nice. You can actually see the fear in his eyes. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's really nicely done.
Yeah.
Watch here. Look at that look.
Yeah, now I get the craziness.
See, I don't like how well lit Ringo is there. And now
he was pumped with light, but Fraker all through this film has been pouring light on people's faces so their eyes pop.
Right. Yeah. And I got the eyes popping thing. But he'd been in such nice shade before.
Right. No, he was.
Now, this is more what a gunfight probably would be like if they did square off against each other, which is we're 5 feet away from each other, not 30, you know. Much more realistic if they were ever to do an actual duel, which they didn't do a whole lot of, by the way. I always liked that shot of him pulling down to his mouth for whatever reason. I don't know why.
Bam.
Another good line here.
That's great.
It's too good.
See, look at the light on him. Look at his eyes.
Yeah. It works well with him.
Oh. I love his line right here about hypocrisy. Knows no bounds.
In his Immortals. That's
now,
great.
Like this shot right here, I mean, Val Kilmer is a really good writer as well. Mm-hmm. Look at this lit. Yeah.
That is lit.
So this is all, that again, this is all montage.
Yeah.
How do you know?
No, it's not.
Sorry, I'm just being an ass.
My point is structurally. Yes.
Well, you could throw a montage wherever you want.
Well, exactly, I know, but baby.
There's just too many people to work. Kill.
Good stunt work. Yeah.
So and quite honestly, at this point in the game, do we, you know, it's sort of like at the end of a boxing movie. You know what I mean? How do you make the last boxing fight after you've seen 15 of them?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So you throw a montage in. Okay, I mean, all right. Okay.
Yeah, you just.
But all good writing sequences. Like right here, this is
that's
kind
nice.
Of like, okay, why do we.
Nice.
You know. But I like their. The morality in this. Okay, yeah, no shoot. Sash. I'm going to throw it. And then, never mind. I'll holster my gun. Here we go. All right, he put it down.
He's a good man.
He's a man of his word.
That's right.
But good.
Well, that's nice slow
right
motion.
Here, look at this.
It's very nice.
Why?
Whoa,
I don't
shaking
know,
hands,
but still good.
Man.
But see, you could see how good of a rider Russell is because he's reining his horse right there to keep in stride with Val's horse.
Absolutely. Nice. That's got to be helicopter.
Yeah.
I would say so.
Yep. Yeah, now we know.
Or
look at that crane shot.
Or a really large,
big crane.
Really tall duck.
And then, so all of that.
And then we
here.
Wind up at here.
This is where they drop off.
So I'm assuming that Ike Clanton survived.
Who?
Ike Clanton. Stephen Lang.
Oh, the guy that dropped the sash?
Yeah.
Yeah, he survived a lot of times, didn't he?
No, I think historically, I guess what this is saying is that he survived.
Now, indeed. Once again, this scene is actually in itself a good scene, and it's a very watchable scene, so you're able to watch this scene coming up and enjoy it for what it is, but to me, so out of place for the rest of the movie. It's like, to me.
Yeah. Well,
It's... This gets back to the structure of it. Once again, once you explode the structure of going beyond the OK Corral, then you deal with all these other things, and this is one of those things to deal with.
Nice lighting.
And now, as an actor, could you imagine doing this scene the way he's doing it? It's probably his best acted scene in the movie, in my opinion. Val Kilmer, that is.
Well, the great thing about Val Kilmer is that he's such a character actor. He's so able to be malleable, as opposed to someone like Kurt Russell, who can really bring presence and emotion, but each role is within a range. Val Kilmer truly can transform himself.
How many times you see an actor? How many times you see an actor get his teeth lit? Look at Val Kilmer's teeth right here.
I'm dying. How are you?
What did I say? Good stuff, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Probably fabulous. The longest pause we've ever had since we've done commentaries.
And look at Russell right here. But, I mean, what an amazing shot. A single left on there for that long.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of Val Kilmer. The last thing I remember seeing him in is Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Yeah.
That of note.
So you see here, my friend Don Holliday by Wyatt Earp. So he started, I guess, writing.
That's cool.
So they totally jumped in the actual year.
No, but this gets to my point about the about that was his actual last lines.
Is that because he always thought he'd die with his boots on?
Well, I see the tunnel of light, one or the other.
I never really know.
Because he's looking at his bare feet.
Yeah. I think that's just the way they interpreted it.
Very well done, Tim. Yes, I would think that. I mean, being a gunfighter, that's how he figured he'd die.
Yeah.
That's the best looking 1800s sewman I've ever seen.
They worked long and hard on it. No, but my point about the article is that Wyatt Earp had started writing.
Stuff was being
ghostwritten, and that's what started building up the legend.
But that
of
being
Dana
said,
Delaney.
I mean, giant leap in the actual chronology of
There is.
Ah, beautiful.
And that was my thing with the montage, is that the montage essentially included a crucial final plot point, is that Ike Clanton said, fine, I give up, that's it. You know.
We never saw what happened to his wife, right? Or did
no.
we?
I'm no. sorry. See, that's another thing.
She went off. She went off with Virgil and the others. Yeah, they all went off together.
Taking a big leap there, son. Maybe she didn't want you.
But I'd really like to have front row seats for tonight's performance.
Exactly.
But I'm really well backlit.
Yeah.
But wherever I
go. Those two candles are... Man, what do you call it? Come on, seriously?
It's the skylight.
Yeah.
Gotta love those skylights.
Those skylights are awesome.
Oh, I made the right choice.
Oh, yay! That's funny. Now, this is a beautiful music cue. This is like a 10-minute cue, if I'm remembering correctly, because I have the score.
I'm sorry. This always bugged me. Mm-hmm. What is that? Fake snow? No.
Yeah, this is the cue I'm thinking of.
And now Wyatt Earp's dancing. No, turn it off. Plug the ears, please.
And the music is a bit much here. But
yeah, it's
a beautiful cue.
And I'm like, oh.
And here's Robert Mitchum again. There you go.
I was expecting, a Christmas musical montage. Everyone to break out into song. Look at that snow. Yeah. Look at the snow in his hair. That's not snow.
Nice.
Yeah, but anyway, to me, that ending just is...
I didn't like that freeze frame.
No, I just...
You didn't like the freeze
personally,
frame?
Personally, not that the way it was
and
done.
And then it's like they put this in there to remind us what the movie was really about. It's like, oh, wait, by the way, guys, this is what we meant for you to see.
Well, it gets back to, you know, how do you tell the story? And it gets back to my point about how they chase down all the cowboys, but then the last one, the last important one, Ike Clanton, he just went as part of the... montage, it just buried that part, so there was no climax in that sense. And that's why I want to go back to see Wyatt Earp now and see how they play out the different beats of that story. I mean, it plays differently. It's, you know... I mean, overall, I think it's immensely entertaining film.
But and the story person of me, I'd rather have the
whole... Oh, here, Catherine Hardwick, production designer. We recognize that name?
No.
She was the director of... What's Twilight?
Ah.
Yes.
Wow. Went on to direct Twilight.
She went on to direct Twilight.
A movie filled with nothing but estrogen, even in the men.
But I'm bummed.
Anyway, just William A. Fraker was an associate producer. William A. Fraker was an associate producer.
I'm sure.
He probably gave him that for.
Well, because basically as a DP, he probably stepped in and helped to basically direct visually how the film was. So he got an associate producer credit for that.
I see.
Couldn't get the DGA credit. Then had to go to Cosmatos.
Damn unions.
Well, I mean, damn unions. What are you talking about?
So let me say real quick. Story wise, I'm really glad they threw in the whole female and the whole whatever and Doc Holliday thing. Just because I'm always for longer movies that are good. I mean, you know what I'm saying. But I could definitely see where they could have cut out that whole two storylines that made it more of a Western. No,
but it's one of those things where I'm not disappointed with what scenes are in there or left in there. But it just, to me, it seems like, once again, it's like it's, we've lost so much in the actual storytelling of what it was supposed to be. And since we've heard that this has all had a horrible, bad production and everything
difficult
else.
Difficult production. Would be fair.
Well, that being the case, you know, you don't know what kind of studio, they were dealing with at the time and what the studio was, what kind of restrictions they were putting on them or what kind of like, hey, let's just get this done and let's do this. And
Can I just say during these credits, this is great that they have this whole thing where they're walking down the street. This is there's hair in there.
They used every bit of footage that they shot.
That's right. But that was good. And Charlton Heston is Henry Hooker. Thank you, Mr. Heston. Narrated by Robert Mitchum.
But anyway, as a whole, I mean, as at the end, whenever I said the negative things about it, I love the film.
Yeah.
I love watching it for those reasons.
Now,
for the other reasons.
And now, because you've seen Wyatt Earp also, right?
But it's been a while, yeah.
Okay, yeah. I think I'm going to have to go back and take a look at it, too, and
see what I liked.
I mean, I know because it starts off with Wyatt being really young and running away and all that kind of thing.
Who was the one that played Virgil Earp in that? Steve McQueen, the guy that thinks he's Steve McQueen.
I will be right back.
Reservoir Dogs, what's his name?
Michael Madsen?
Michael Madsen, and I never really bought Michael Madsen as a cowboy. That's what. Sure. I mean, I like Michael Madsen, but I was like, you know, I mean, that's my own foibles that are problems with that, though. So, but Costner is a great cowboy. I'm not a Costner hater like some people.
No, I think
Costner is actually a really excellent actor. I mean, he needs to have the right role, but he's really good. By the way, Fraker shot Rosemary's Baby.
Ah.
There you go.
So
and,
he's.
And he,
he really didn't shoot a baby. What?
No, Rosemary's Baby. Yeah.
God damn. And he's still allowed to walk. He's still allowed to make movies.
So yeah, actually, if we're looking at different casts in Wyatt Earp, Costner of course played Earp. Dennis Quaid played Doc Holliday.
Gene Hackman plays
Lyndon Ashby. Yeah, Gene Hackman plays his father. Joanna Going plays Josie Marcus. Mark Harmon plays a sheriff. Michael Madsen plays Virgil.
Now,
Catherine O'Hara plays Allie Earp. Bill Pullman plays Ed Masterson. Holy crap. Isabella Rossellini plays Big Nose Kate.
And what's a guy's name that played Ringo?
Hang on.
The actor that with the big blue eyes, it was in Silverado. I can't think of his name now. He was in Lost, too. Excuse me. Not that I can't think of his name. But anyway, overall, they're two different movies, but I would actually probably say that Wyatt Earp is probably more historically correct.
IMDb says it's Norman Howell.
No. Or maybe he played. Who played Ike?
Ike was Jeff Fahey. Yeah,
Jeff
Fahey. Lapidus.
There you go, Jeff Fahey.
That's right.
And Jeff Fahey's another actor that doesn't get his just due, and he's a good actor. Been around a long time.
I didn't like him as a younger actor. Now as an older actor. Yeah. I mean, I thought he was awesome on Lost.
Yeah. Anyway.
That's.
But this movie, what'd you think of the score, Tim?
It's a good, great Western score. I don't know too much about Bruce Broughton's work. I know Young Sherlock Holmes. He did an awesome score.
That's a famous.
Yeah, that's another one
geeks.
Of his top scores. But that fit the film very well. Beautiful melody, main melody line. The romance stuff he did was great. And then the Basil Poledouris homage.
Yes.
You know.
And if anybody out there, we keep mentioning Basil, at one point in his career became the Western guy. He did Lonesome Dove and he did Quigley Down
Excelled
Under.
Excelled at Westerns.
Yeah,
yeah.
Just, and especially the romantic themes.
Lonesome Dove.
Yeah, Lonesome Dove is an amazing main.
But this theme right here.
Yeah.
Dude's too high for me to see.
Terry Leonard did the was a stunt coordinator.
Terry Leonard, famous
for Indiana Jones.
Indiana Jones, yes. And was the double for Harrison in that movie.
Yes.
But
Harrison Ford?
Yeah. Okay. He's the one that did the famous dragging behind the truck scene.
That's right. Yes, which was basically taken
under the truck.
Derived from the scene in Stagecoach.
Exactly.
Which was done by
Yakima Kinnett.
That's right.
If you're trying to think of that name, he's the man who actually staged the Ben-Hur chariot race and did a lot of second unit action sequences. El Cid, he did a lot of battles.
Looking at this movie now, you go back and you watch those montages of chases and everything. The horse falls and everything were classic Terry Leonard stuff.
Yes.
It's great stuff.
All that stuff and the second unit stuff, amazing.
Terry Leonard in person and he don't walk too straight.
I don't think any stunt person after a while does. You got to take your hat off to really the stunt people. You watch them work and just always, it's tough stuff, but they throw themselves into it. And it's always about safety.
And great. Well, now that we've done one Western, we should do Three Amigos next. No, I'm just kidding.
Sweet!
Sing it, Gush.
Look over here.
That's funny.
My kids love that scene.
That's a funny scene.
Hey, you guys. Anyway, John.
So real quick, Tim, first time ever seeing it.
What'd you think?
I liked it. I'll watch it again, and I can hear all the dialogue because we're doing our thing. Yeah. But it's intrigued me, and I like a good Western, so I'll watch it.
I mean, just for the for the sheer camera work and the DP work and the doing all these classic Western shots, it's eye candy.
It was nice to see a shot in the arm to the Western genre. You know, 93, and then as far as I love seeing a good old school ish. Western, and that to me had a lot of old school elements in there.
Yeah. How about you, John?
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It was good. I mean, what I really liked on the whole writing thing, I really appreciate you saying it because I don't know if it's just everything, but the whole thing of that Johnny Ringo was really a mirror of Doc Holliday. I mean, it was pretty obvious that's what Doc Holliday said, you know, at the beginning, but then that's the whole reason why he knew. You know, he had a hole in his heart and he couldn't fill it. But Doc was just doing it with gambling and possibly cheating and all that stuff. And then Johnny Ringo did it the other way with violence and all that. So that's just nice writing because that's, you know, a lot of screenplays just don't always go to that depth of literature or whatever literature-like type writing. So I enjoyed that a lot.
Right. Curtis?
Oh, I've said my piece, I think. How about you, Serge?
I think I've said a lot of my piece, too. I think it's very entertaining. I do want to see Wyatt Earp, so I can kind of stack it up next week. I know I'd seen them back-to-back years ago, so that's when I did my comparison. And I think... Yes, John?
Can I say one quick thing? Yeah. Structure-wise, it was very interesting. At the very end, there was two bad guys. One was the girl that was challenging his whole way of life, and the other one was Johnny Ringo. And structure-wise, he didn't face Johnny Ringo, which was very fun. Doc Holliday did.
Yeah.
So they sort of cheated that, but he did then face the girl, and he decided to go with her.
But actually, was the antagonist Johnny Ringo, or was it the Paris Booth character?
Well, that says, like, in a lot of movies, like it's sort of like Stormtroopers and Darth Vader. It's like in Star Wars, they don't always have to butt up against Darth Vader. You can butt up against the henchmen.
And you still know it's the same source of evil.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I think that's where I think to maintain historical accuracy, that's where, I mean, I guess the cleanliness that we've come to expect, or that's actually required of a feature film structure, kind of butts up against that. Whereas when you're working with the subtleties of, I guess, once again, if you're working with a mini series where you have 8, 10, or 12 hours, or you do several seasons like on Deadwood, you can tease that, you can have different episodes that explore different things, and then over an arc of different things, you can become more novelistic and play off these different themes and really explore them. Because the whole thing with the Johnny Ringo and Doc Holliday, them being mirrors of each other, I think it was nice that they touched on it. I would have loved to have seen more of that, but that's, once again, another movie, and that becomes a whole other arc, which a longer format would allow you to do. Yeah. So It has its flaws, I'm sure. Highly entertaining. Yes, it's a great seeing them shoot. Great sound effects, by the way.
Yeah.
Great shooting sound effects. They didn't chintz. It's not the old fashioned.
Yeah.
That nice big boom behind it. So, any last words?
Serge, whenever you
adios,
want.
Partners.
I'll be your Huckleberry man.
Yeah. My Huckleberry.
Huckleberry. You'll be my heart, my Huckleberry. Who are you?
Who's Huckleberry?
Lily Tomlin.
Curses.
All right. Anyway.
Okay. That's right. Anyway, on that note, this has been Serge Dalpierre.
John H. Ruby.
Tim McMillan.
Curtis Nelson.
And this has been Film Grok. Thank you very much. See you next time. Bye.